June.
I call this the regular board meeting of the Board of Trustees to order. Date is May 21st, 2013. The time is 6:06. Tony, can you please call roll?
Mr. Coronado?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Medina?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Searles?
Here.
And just real quick, if we could, can I get RJ, if you're willing to come up here and lead us into Pledge of Allegiance and as well as the Texas Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Under the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
With the tragic events that happened yesterday, I would ask the board and the community if we could have a moment of silence for those in the world. That'll take us to the next item, which is our mission statement. And Nicholas, if you could please state our mission statement.
Be happy to. Benathia Independent School District will provide a quality education to ensure that all students graduate on time, are prepared for higher education, or are workforce ready.
That will take us to, I just want to welcome our new superintendent. He'll be fully on board on June 3rd, but Dr. Galvis, which is our new superintendent, and so welcome to Dr. Galvis. That will take us to the next item.
Item two is for honors, Mr. Reveles.
Board President Rodriguez, members of the board, Ms. Brigham, could you please come up to the steps? Barnhill, like most college-bound students, took the SAT this year. Unlike most students, though, RJ scored significantly higher than the average high school junior or senior. That's pretty impressive, especially after you learned that RJ is a seventh grader at Tempe Middle School, and he's not scheduled to graduate from high school for another 5 years. Indeed, RJ is something we can all be proud of, a student who shows extraordinary promise for academic excellence at a very early stage. RJ took the SAT as part of the Duke University Talent Identification Program, a program that aims to identify academically gifted students and provide them with opportunities to support their development. Because of his performance on the SAT, Arde has qualified to participate in Duke's Summer Studies Academy, in which he will spend 3 weeks working with highly motivated peers and expert instructors, going over age-specific, high-intense learning experiences that require higher-level thinking and social experiences. All this translates to something that is very simple. RJ is one of the country's best and brightest students. The CMS student, RJ Barnhill, along with principals, CMS principal, Dr. Monica Reyes, wasn't able to be here, come up and greet the Board of Trustees. RJ.
Jennifer Gumar.
Board President Rodriguez, board members, and Mrs. Brigham. Good evening and thank you for your time. My name is Jennifer Gumar, mom to Nathaniel Gumar, kindergartner at Garcia Elementary, where I also volunteer. I'm coming tonight to ask that you replace the money that Garcia Elementary had to take out of their student activity fund to which the students earn through fundraisers to purchase toilet paper, paper towels, and cleaning supplies. When I read the school newsletter that states, quote, "We appreciate your support during the recent fundraiser. We will be using some of the funds to purchase cleaning supplies, paper towels, and toilet paper. The budget for these supplies was decreased by $2,000, and all funds have been used to purchase what the custodians need to clean and maintain the building. We appreciate your support," end quote. I was very upset. Before I jump to conclusions, as a former teacher and as a daughter of an administrator, I spoke with Mrs. Maxim to find out why these funds were being used as stated above. She stated that when she realized there was not enough money to purchase the cleaning supplies, toilet paper, and paper towels, she asked the district financial director to transfer money from another account to cover the expenses, to which she was told no because the other account was already closed. When Mrs. Maxim asked what she should do, she was told, quote, "figure it out." This problem concerns me on many levels. I feel that the financial director should work with the administration to find funds to meet the basic necessities at the school instead of telling the administrators to, quote, "figure it out." As a taxpayer, I would like to see my tax dollars that are used for school maintenance be distributed based on school enrollment and the physical size of the school, not just the physical size of the school as is currently done. Garcia Elementary enrolls almost 250 more students than the schools that have the same physical square footage. Therefore, they should be given more funds to help meet the needs of those additional students. If funds are not available, there should be a way for administrators to work with their peers at other schools who might have surplus. We are, after all, an independent school district, not an independent school. Second, as a parent, I'm frustrated and embarrassed that I helped my son ask family and friends to purchase items for a school fundraiser, thinking I was helping increase the student activities fund, only to find out that the money we raised is being used to purchase cleaning supplies, toilet paper, and paper towels, instead of sending students on more field trips and having more award assemblies and achievement prizes. While I realize the funds are still being used to support the students, they are not being used for what the students told the community as they asked for support. I'm sure that, like myself, many members of our community would rather have been told or asked to donate items needed or money specifically for the cleaning products, rather than to find out later that their contributions were not being used for student activities. Additionally, I want to make sure that these funds are not used for maintenance costs for summer school. That should be a separate budget. Finally, I feel like the district should replace the money because our students were told that the money they raised would be used for celebrations, not cleaning. If we are to teach our children the importance of honesty and doing what is right, I feel that the district should lead by example and replace the money taken from the student activities fund at Garcia Elementary. Thank you for your time.
Next is Hannah Hollenberg.
I do not belong to this school district. I am an APISD student. I go to El Paso High School. I'm a junior. But for the past year, I've been working on an independent study project about transparency and accountability in local government. And as part of this project, I wrote three sets of guidelines covering meetings, public information, and accountability that are designed to improve on existing laws like the Open Meetings Act and the Public Information Act. And they're designed for greater transparency and better open government. So I've been working on this for the past year, and I took my recommendation of my guidelines, right, and then I applied them to seven local entities, the city and county, four school districts, including your own, also Clint, EPISD, and Isleta ISD, and the Housing Authority of El Paso, and I graded these entities on their transparency and accountability structures and how well they're doing and how open they are. And then I made recommendations on how they can improve in their transparency and accountability structures. So I'm here to tell you a little bit about my project today and to explain what my findings were about Canopia. I actually, the way, using my guidelines and my standards, I found that you all received an F, which was the lowest grade that could be received. I found that you're weak in public information structures and in meetings. You're also a little bit weak when it comes to special groups like the disabled and Spanish speakers. You're a little bit stronger in accountability. Part of my project was to file a Freedom of Information Act request, which I received after 12 days, which is more than the time that's allotted for those open records requests. So this is not all bad, though. I did offer recommendations to improve. So let me just go over a few of these right now. Here are a few of the things that I think you all could improve on. Some of these are more expensive and might be more difficult to implement. but others are very, very easy. And everything is in there. Everything is in your packet. But here are just a few of the biggest things. Improve your controller leadership circle rating. That's a very easy thing. You can go from a silver to a gold with not that much effort, a minimum of effort. You should post your entire budgets online, not just a one-page budget summary. You know, millions of dollars at your disposal, those entire budgets need to be online, not just summaries. Other important documents related to the administration of the school board should be posted online. Audit reports, bid tracking information, campaign finance reports, and annual audit plans should be posted online, because that's how most people access information in the digital age. You should record video rather than audio of meetings, I think. That provides a fuller picture of what's going on in meetings. I also noticed you don't have screens. Well, you do have screens, but they don't seem to be in use for the meetings. And the purpose of the screens would be so that members of the public who are at a meeting can see the same documents that the board members are seeing, which is an important part of transparency. And it's basically the overall theme of my project, that members of the public can see the same information, can access the same information as members of a board. Also, your meeting site is not very accessible to people in wheelchairs. You have space for people in wheelchairs, but you don't have very good entrances. You know, they're hard to open. It's hard to get into. You don't have Spanish or sign language interpreters, which I understand could be a little expensive for a school board, but I think that's an important part of making your meetings accessible to as many groups as possible. Also, I think you could improve your times for open records requests. You could get those out faster. And also, I think you could post your budgets outside as well as inside. So I hope that you can look over this information. I hope it helps. I hope that you can implement some of my recommendations. Some of them are very easy. Some of them are a little harder. And so I hope that that I can work with you guys to improve your transparency and accountability. And so thank you very much. My contact information is inside. If I would be happy to work with any of you or meet with you if you need more information. Thank you very much.
I'll take this to the next.
Item 4A, discussion and possible action for selection of external audit firm, RFQ 1310.
Good evening, Board President Rodriguez, members of the board, Ms. Brigham. You should have in front of you the evaluation that the evaluation committee did to rank the auditors that are proposing their services to the district. We only have one thing left to do, and that's you've seen the interviews for the candidates that are wishing to do business with us. So now we just have to decide if you want to rank tonight and award tonight, and how you want to proceed with it.
Just real quick, I have a question. I did receive some information, and so I have some questions, especially for our auditors, our internal auditors, and that's on the policy that we had created on the mandatory rotation. There's positives and negatives on both sides of the argument, so just if you could get some feedback.
Back in February 14, we issued a memo that was related to the consulting project that we performed related to analyzing the current policy that we have in place related to mandatory rotation of the external auditor. And basically, we found good arguments on both sides for and against the rotation of external auditor. The main arguments for staying with the same internal auditor is that, you know, they have experience, related to working with the district and are familiar with the internal controls related to the district. The main argument against staying with the same internal auditor is that there may be an erosion of independence as time goes on. And so, you know, it's basically, you know, the two sides of the same coin. You could make arguments for and against, and one benefit on one side is really the weakness on the other side, and vice versa. And so these prolonged engagements, they can manifest themselves into, you know, a relationship where, you know, the auditor is very close with management, and they build that, you know, close relationship. And that can be the negative part of the working relationship, is where the independence is lost, and, you know, the auditor gets cozy with management, starts to negotiate and have more compassion related to management's concerns. And so basically those are the two arguments for and against staying and rotating the external auditor.
Did you get, did you look at that? I had some discussion earlier with the book, our internal auditor, regarding that, and so do you want to give any input on that?
Well, we did do some research, and again, you know, we did research on both sides of, you know, for and against the rotation of external auditors. We looked at the CPA Journal and looked at an article titled Audit Firm Rotation and Audit Quality, and within that article, they both, you know, they provide arguments for both sides.
The other question that I have, and I guess this came after Sarbanes-Oxley with Enron and all that stuff that had gone on, and I guess the discussion that we had was, do we want to stay with the same policy? I would personally prefer that. And then if there's any other questions, I was looking at the ranking by their person. You all have your, I guess, your ranking.
So your number one choice would be the number one, two, three, four, ninth ranking order. So your would be number one choice, and we'll total those up again.
But meaning that My number one, that goes to quite some of your work down. So if you want, I could provide those rankings, or you could provide those.
Sure. GRP being our previous audit, I took them out of the running entire, I didn't really rank them on that, but I didn't rank like some Diego Campbell. One, Paul Smith, three.
Do I have a motion? Do we want
why I did, because the higher the number, the
less. Well, this one is going to be the least.
Okay. Thank you. That's why we're kind of working on it.
You're right.
Uh-huh. But Letty's right. But Letty's right. The less will be the yeah. best.
Like golf.
So probably for the record, yeah, like golf.
It's the only way I remember.
Is there any other information on administration for auditors?
We're trying hard. Do you want to add the total? You want to score it up there?
I think if we have one and have more discussion, if not, I'll ask for a motion.
Move to White, San Diego, Campbell for external audit.
And I'll sit.
I have a motion on a second on the floor. I hear no discussion.
The only thing that would ask was that we enter into negotiation.
Oh, yeah, enter into contract negotiation.
I amend my motion.
I amend.
So I have a motion on the floor to enter into contract negotiations with White, Summit, Diego, and Campbell. And I have a second. There's no other discussion. Tell me, can we go?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
And I do want to thank Mr. Gibson for the past couple of years. They do an exceptional good job, and we appreciate the services.
Thank you.
Thank you. If I could get your ranking sheets later on, so we can tell you at 3:00.
That's my
very good.
Congratulations. No, that's the
first.
Oh, that's the
check.
Item B, discussion and possible action regarding resolution in opposition to House Bill 343.
Just real quick, we do have a resolution that has been presented.
Excellent.
And thanks to Steve. Ms. Searles, would you like to read it?
Sure. School District and the Kenny ISD Board of Trustees strive to achieve the best possible environment for educational purposes. And whereas the School Board of Trustees receive no monetary compensation for their service. And whereas School Board Trustees oversee management of the school districts, which are charged with educating the vast majority of the children in this state. And whereas the work required of a School Board Trustee is difficult, challenging, and time-consuming, requiring compliance with and management of increasingly complex laws and regulations, unfunded mandates, burgeoning special population, decreasing revenues, higher expectations, and related issues. And whereas it is important that qualified persons be encouraged to become candidates for the position of school board trustee. And whereas Section 11.064 of the Texas Education Code recognizes these issues by making the filing of financial statements by school board trustees mandatory on a local option basis by the decision of individual boards, although Section 11.064(a)(3) also provides the Commissioner of Education the authority to require school board trustees to file such financial statements by order on an as-needed basis in appropriate circumstances. And whereas House Bill 343, as originally introduced, would have made mandatory the filing of financial statements as described in Chapter 572, Subchapter B of the Texas Government Code for all school board trustees across the state of Texas, and whereas the House Committee on Public Education wisely rejected House Bill 343 as originally introduced, and whereas the House Committee on Public Education unfortunately reported favorably a revised edition of House Bill 343, Committee Substitute House Bill CSHB 343, that would apply to only 9 independent school districts located in El Paso County, and whereas supporters of CSHB 343 cite previous corruption problems involving a few trustees in 3 out of the 9 school districts in El Paso County, but there is no evidence that corruption among school board trustees in El Paso County school districts has been greater on a per capita basis than other school districts in Texas over time, and whereas there is no evidence that the filing of financial statements would have prevented the corruption issues that did occur in the past in El Paso County school district, and whereas the circumstances that would require financial statements by order of the Commissioner of Education under 11.064(a)(1) do not exist in this school district, as the trustees in this district have complied with the filing and recusal requirements of Chapter 171 of the Texas Local Government Code, the district financial accounting practices are adequate to safeguard state and district funds, and the district has met applicable standards set by the Commissioner in the Financial Accountability Rating System. And whereas the Legislative Budget Board, in its fiscal note on CSHB 343, dated April 11, 2013, specifically found that the financial statement filing requirement could be burdensome for small ISDs that have limited qualified candidates, and whereas the majority of the 9 independent school districts located in El Paso County are small districts, and whereas the issue of limited qualified candidates is an issue to all school all school districts must contend with, and is not solely restricted to small districts, and whereas qualified candidates for school board trustee positions are needed now more than ever, but CSHB 343 will discourage well-qualified persons from seeking election to school district boards who justifiably do not wish to undertake the additional burden and risk of allowing all the world to peruse their financial statements for whatever purpose desired, and whereas CSHB 343 is a punitive, discriminatory measure aimed at school districts that are in need of the best possible trustee candidates for the benefit of our school children and that are in need of assistance from the state, not punishment. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Trustees of the Kennedy Independent School District, City of El Paso County, that 1. The matters and facts stated in the preamble hereof are found and determined to be true and correct and are established as the position of the Kennedy Independent School District with regard to legislation requiring financial disclosures from school district trustees. 2. That the Board of Trustees joins other districts in this county and requests that the Texas House of Representatives and the Texas Senate reject CSHB 343. 3. Should CSHB 343 be enacted by both the House of Representatives and the Senate and sent to Governor Rick Perry for signature, that this board request the Honorable Governor Perry to veto said bill. 4. The superintendent is directed to distribute this resolution to the members of the Texas House and Senate, to Governor Rick Perry, to other school districts, and to other interested parties as soon as feasible. Resolved, passed, adopted, and approved this 21st day of May, 2013. That's an excellent resolution. And we'll have a test on this at the end. Y'all are listening really well.
The other issue that, since we do have the resolution and it talks about House Bill 343, if it does go past, we're on the way to our bond room.
Part of the issue that we've discussed with both our senator and with our representative is that we were okay that financial statements be required, but our position was that we made it clear to our senator that it should be required of all elected and appointed officials, and not to single out the El Paso County Board of Trustees. And they didn't, and initially as it was presented that it would include all trustees in the state of Texas. I'm fine with that. Well, I'm fine with even extending it to everybody who has any kind of dealings with oversight of government, of community funds. Great, let's put everybody in the same boat. But I feel that as you know, they couldn't pass it through the rest of the legislature, and so the rest of the legislators and senators told them, hey, going forward, they decided, well, we'll just make it applicable to El Paso County School Board of Trustees. Which to me, I talked to our senator about the issues that I felt that, because this isn't just a matter of a requirement, it makes it a criminal issue. And I don't think they considered that it would be unconstitutional. They may have considered that it was constitutional when it was written initially, but not as it was modified and came out in CHSB 343. And we made these comments directly to our senator. Our representative, Mr. Moody, agreed with us. And he indicated to us that he had signed on to the bill when it originally went that it would apply to all boards. Trustees in the state of Texas. And he seemed not to be in favor of the bill as it was modified. Senator Rodriguez, on the other hand, stated that we needed to take the lead in El Paso County since the rest of the state would. And I, you know, we discussed with him that we felt it was unconstitutional if they had even considered it. And he finally said that they said, well, I'm going to have my general counsel take a look at it. And we were here to inform him that we felt that it was improper to them not to have done it in the first place. You know, and I told him that I felt, you know, it was ironic that he, of all people, as an ex-prosecutor and an attorney, that wouldn't have considered that to begin with when they modified it. And I told, you know, we told them that we weren't against the issue, but we were against it as it was being applied only to El Paso County. We felt that was discriminatory and in violation of the state and federal constitution, the Unequal Protection Clause. And I still feel that it's that way. But our senator didn't back down and said he was going forward with it. The bill was initially drafted and put into the House side by its sponsor was Marisa, and it was carried on the Senate side by Senator Rodriguez. I'm for having disclosure, financial statements, if it's going to be equal to everybody. As a matter of fact, let's just make everybody do it. Every single, not just board trustees. It's like anybody who handles community funds, government funds, subject to this disclosure. If they can't pass that through the state of Texas, they should be singled out. In other words, they're going to make it apply to only 9 of the 1,000 plus school districts in the state of Texas. that's their way of spearheading it forward to make this a criminal action and besmudge El Paso County again. Like, we're the only ones that need this.
I think that was really well put, what you just said to us, to besmudge us. Instead of saying the past is behind us, justice has been done, we're moving forward, we are looking ahead, just as, I don't know, there used to be a bunch of posters in here that said we were looking ahead. You know, we're not looking to the past, and our board is not any of the things that these others have been, you know, had a light shine on them. And I really like our resolution, and I think it's a strong message, and I'd like to be the one to take it and deliver it to the governor, too, if it comes to that.
The only thing that I might want to add to that is that we're that our district is not against the issue if it applies evenly to everybody.
I think on the press release, we'll just maybe just send this out on Thursday or Friday. That way there's some time and it doesn't make one of the other issues that we're going to be dealing with. But that we specifically say, you know, we're not against it.
And I don't want people to be exactly, but people to say that we are against disclosure of financial statement. That's not it.
We're against discrimination.
We're against discrimination in this way. And I think it's not only discriminatory, but it's violative of the U.S. and the state constitution.
So if I have a motion to approve the resolution.
I move to approve the resolution in opposition to House Bill 340.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. If there's no discussion, Tony, can you?
Mr. Cormier?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes.
Next item.
Item C, discussion and possible action regarding resolution in support of amendment of section 11.170 of the Texas Education Code.
I had some concerns with this, and so I had been approached a couple of months ago by an individual close Sleta to address this issue. And so looking at within that resolution that they have, I believe it's attached, page 16, pretty much says that it's not clear. And I believe if you look at it, I mean, it was clear when Mr. Coronado was present and made sure that, you know, especially from the pushback from the administration, that we would make sure that the internal auditor reported directly to the board. So I sort of, you know, when looking at the resolution, but they still haven't gotten it straight over there. So I didn't want to go with their resolution. What I wanted to do was to write a letter to structure that works well and serves the purpose for which it is that it was designed, to provide the board with a mechanism for unfiltered review of the district administrative and business practices. Unfortunately, when it is not properly structured, there are many failings and possible adverse consequences. The events in El Paso Independent School District are a stark example of this fact. CISU board has always structured its internal audit function properly. The internal auditor reports directly to the board. The board evaluates that function. Unfortunately, some districts do not use the proper structure. While we at CISD believe the required structure is clear, some El Paso school districts find the statutory requirement for the internal audit function to be unclear or to impose requirements they clearly do not. Given the importance of this function and potential harm when it is not properly structured, CISD believes mandatory board training should be required on this topic for all school boards. There should be no room for debate or misunderstanding on the structure and oversight of this function. Section 11.170 of the Education Code states quite clearly, internal auditor shall report directly to the board. The requirement should be mandatory, a mandatory item for all school board training, continuing education courses. This is ample time and the topic is sufficiently important such that TEA should impose a requirement for school board training across the state. CISD internal audit structures is a model for the appropriate process. We would be happy to share our work in the next school board training session at a state conference. So pretty much it is clear, and so I did talk to our legislators on this issue, is that we needed to provide better education, more mandatory education. I'm sure they might get pushback, but that's what the law states. And so we need that the commissioner in the room know this will also go to our state delegation to let them know that we require it as part of the education. So if that's okay with the board, I would like to approve this letter to send to the commission on education. And if there's any discussion, it's wrong.
I'm in favor of the letter.
We're okay with the letter. Can we get a motion to approve the letter? And second as well.
I move to approve the letter.
I second.
I have a motion and a second to approve a letter to our commissioner about the internal audit function as it relates to school board. Hearing no discussion.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
And that will take us to the next item.
Item D is the Policy, Instruction, Personnel, Student Services Committee meeting report of May 13, 2013. Mrs. Gonzalez.
Good evening. We had a Instruction, Personnel, Policy, Student Services Committee meeting on May the 13th. And some of the items that we discussed, one of them was regarding Transportation Department update. And during that time, Mr. Herrera, who is the interim transportation person, he made some recommendations to the committee. And one of them, during that time, we requested that since he had many findings and recommendations, we asked him that he provide us the report of his findings to the full board in writing. The second agenda item was a discussion and possible formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding our corrective action plan. The update. And this overview consisted of activities, conditions, or findings, projected completion dates, persons responsible. And this information that was presented to us during that time will be forwarded to the certification agency. Also, we requested from the financial services department that they provide us budgets and spending to include federal and local high department percentages spent. Also, another agenda item C, the Canutillo High School Senior Update. And in that agenda item, Ms. Brigham informed us that
365 seniors were expected to graduate. 300 who will graduate, 18 are unsure, and those students are expected to graduate during the summer. Agenda item D, Mr. Mike Gonzalez made some, addressed the security concerns within the district. And the recommendation by the committee was that Mr. Gonzalez supervise the security personnel of the district pending administration final recommendation. Also, Mr. Gonzalez, along with some of the board members, will be visiting Isleta and El Paso Independent School District security departments. There's also $200,000 available for some of the security concerns that Mr. Gonzalez addressed to the committee. Agenda item E, the food services updated service. Ms. Alina Castillo and Martha G. represented this agenda item, and this included services and many options. During that agenda item, we asked the Ms. Castillo provide a survey to district-wide students before the school year is over. Agenda item F, this agenda is regarding per diem rates for students. And this one included ensure proper use of district funds and equality with the use of funds among all students. Agenda item G, this is extension of third-party administrative services agreement for cafeteria section 125 plan with Texas Educator Benefits Groups. This is one of the agenda items that is being addressed tonight. Mr. Carmona presented this agenda item to the committee and explained that the third-party service agreement may be renewed annually for three additional one-year periods commencing September 1 and ending August 31. Okay, agenda item H, Ms. Carrasco presented two models for general pay increase for the 2013-2014 school year. One of them was model 1, 2% general pay increase, model 2, 1.5 general pay increase, which is also being considered tonight. Agenda item 9, Ms. Carrasco also presented a manual, adoption localized policy manual, and this was reviewed back on March 2012. It's also being reviewed, it's also being considered tonight by the board. And this concludes brief synopsis of the minutes from May 13, 2013. Any questions?
Questions? Hearing no questions, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Consuelo. Next item.
Item E, Finance Audit Facilities Planning Committee meeting report of May 14, 2013. Mr. Coronado.
Mr. Chair, fellow board members, we had a very good meeting May 14th for the facility finance. We got a presentation from Mr. Goitia with respect to the not just the phase one and the phase two, but all the projects. Pretty much all the projects are underway, and we were presented that. Let me go by the agenda. First, we had a presentation from our internal auditor with respect to the compliance calendar and the hotline update. Everything seems to be working great. The CTE core audit, the financial statement audit, and the textbook audit. And as per request from the board, we instructed our auditors that the compliance calendar with respect to the issues related to the LEP and the special ed students and the policies were put on a separate monitoring system along with the compliance calendar. So everything's to be on track. We actually looked like we're ahead of the game in that respect. With respect to the facilities, we had a roundtable discussion, and Mr. Goitia presented gave us a presentation on the phase one and two projects, and those that were not able to attend. Basically, the majority of the projects, especially the ones that are scheduled for the summer, are already well underway. I believe it was presented us with a several charts with respect to either just the amount of projects as well as the funds that were slotted for each of those projects out of the 2011 bond funds, and approximately 60% with respect to the amount of projects are underway and with respect to the amount of funds committed to those projects, I believe it was more than 60% of the outstanding funds. So it looks like our projects are finally on the go. This summer, we're going to have quite a substantial. I'm just hoping that everything goes as planned, and always there's stuff that, we have little kinks here and there, but we've got a ton of projects. If you look at that, well underway, all these projects with about 60 to 70% of the funds that are committed are slated for those projects that are well underway. I mean, we're talking about $30 million getting underway. So the construction managers are on the job. Have the those in place. Johnson Controls obviously made a presentation also about the district-wide, and they're able to be right on track. As a matter of fact, they're doing a presentation. Mike, what time is the presentation? Right now?
Will you tell me, sir?
And you just wrote.
I can see them waiting in the wings.
Update from that presentation, I wanted the full board. I wasn't able to. I was in D.C.
Yes.
So I want to look at that. I think our overall long-term vision is something we want to continue to have in certain.
Right.
So y'all could, if you're done with your report, give us a report.
Yeah, the rest of it is in your notes at all the projects that are at each of the schools and our campuses. I won't go into a lot of the Johnson Controls since they're here to make the presentation, but one of the issues that we really need to discuss and should be on our plate here is the wastewater treatment issue with respect to the decommissioning and the demolition of the wastewater treatment at the CMS. And I believe that the committee recommended to the board, did recommend that we go ahead and decommission it at this time, but to make preparations with respect to the infrastructure that the Public Service Board is putting into place, so that in the future, when we do decommission it, that the infrastructure for them to take on that additional wastewater will encompass our decommissioning of those water treatment at CMS, even if we do not do that at this time. So we wanted to make sure that in the future we'd be able to have that done so that the infrastructure that's being planned right now for CMS will be able to accommodate that. That's a decision the board should make. Yes.
And I just don't know the answer to the bond manager. This is not the decommissioning of the sewer system, it's back, just what. Does the bond manager, the bond project manager, audit the finances? Is anyone auditing the finances of this, of our $30 million that we're spending?
Well, obviously both our facilities director and our business manager, Martha, are monitoring that. I mean, they have to make the payments, so.
But I mean, auditing, someone is tasked with, dollar for dollar, and it's all gonna end up at the end.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the presentation that was made by Edgar tells us specifically each one of the projects what the, both he and Jennifer made a great presentation on the budgeted amounts, what has been expended, what has been saved in the budget, those items that have been closed out, what is remaining, and what is tracking, whether we've come in under budget or not under budget.
I don't know if you all recall, when Mr. Maldonado was here last summer, finance and facilities actually had two separate sets of books. And since that time, we consolidated the names of the projects and all that, and the financials. And so since that time, what Gloria does, as soon as the end of the, she's the one, the Horace Bar co-partner here in finance, she cuts the numbers from finance. And in the Excel spreadsheet, all those numbers come directly from finance. And then we double check those. And so after that, Maria reviews them. And so basically the four of us sit down together with the budget amendments. None of the budget amendments go through without I make sure that it's coming from the right account, that it is indeed a bond project. And so it's kind of like an active process that, you know, I know that Martha's always keeping an eye on us. So between the five of us, it's really becoming a pretty solid partnership, so that what we publish, and really that Excel spreadsheet, it's like, could be co-signed by both parties, so you know you're getting a solid number of both sides. So it's really an active process.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jeff.
So with that, that's one thing that the board really needs is kind of a pressing issue to decide about whether we would decommission those plants out there at the CMS or not, the Water Creek demolition. But if not, we feel that strongly, and we communicated that to the Public Service Board, that the infrastructure should be made there at this time, whether we decommission at this time or not, so that in the future, if you decide not to do it now.
And I think it was a clarification, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
It was a clarification because we didn't have the full amounts of the decommissioning of the wastewater treatment plant.
That's right.
To make a full assessment of removing those stations at this time.
That's right.
So, and we have a full quote, really, on the system. I think we do have a full quote on just basics.
That's right.
So,
anyways, with respect to any other questions, there's a lot of information on each of the campuses here, but everybody's got their project list. Any other questions? And I'll let Johnson Controls talk on the issues that were discussed at the
on the Public Service Board, the failure to include the decommissioning of the wastewater treatment plant, that's mainly like almost like a plan review comment on our behalf. In other words, we're going through, they cannot cease to use it without going through that TCEQ process. So what we're gathering from that action item is like to tell them, hey, you know what, you have this plan review. I don't see how they can fail to do that. So well, after tonight's agenda item, we'll make that review that recommendation.
That's it here. Important.
Sure. President Rodriguez, board members, thank you for the opportunity to present tonight. What we'd like to do tonight is to present some information related to the lead process that was approved as part of the last contract with JCI. And basically, the lead process that we're going to be discussing tonight is one we want to start introducing that to you in the district. It's a very collaborative process. It is one that involves the board and staff, and even we'd like to involve students in that process. And it's all about developing a defined vision and a defined goal for the lead process in the district. And I have a couple of people with me tonight, Jessica Quiros, who's the project development engineer, is here with us, and she's going to be on our team. This is very much of a team approach. Also, Kim Hoskins is here from our Milwaukee office. She is our green building sustainability person. And I'm going to give Jessica just a moment to introduce herself. She's from the local area, and I'll let Kim introduce herself and then walk you through the process very quickly. So this will be a very short break.
Good afternoon, I'm Jessica Quiros. I'm one of the development engineers for phase two of the performance contracting. A little bit of my background, I graduated from, and I got my bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from UTEP. So I'm from this area. And I'm a lead accredited professional. So in case you have any questions throughout the process, I'll be one of your contacts.
My name is Kim Hoskin, and I'm the Director of Green Buildings for Johnson Controls. And what I wanted to do tonight was tell you a little bit about how we're going to start the LEED process and ask for your participation in one of the parts of the process that we proceed. So you have in front of you just a little brief outline of kind of a practice that we follow, a methodology that we follow with Johnson Controls. And really tonight we're just talking about the first two parts of this. And they're both called benchmarking. One is organizational benchmarking, and the other is the actual facilities benchmarking. So we have this opportunity with the organizational benchmarking to reach out to a lot of different people through a web-based program that's a survey and collect a lot of data. So this is our opportunity to really get people involved and start to get people educated and get them thinking and get them to realize that this is really going to happen here. We're really going to pursue this sustainability program, and we're asking for their input. This is not something we're going to do by ourselves. This is going to touch a lot of people. So we've put together at the last page, a tentative list of suggested people that could participate in this initial part of the process, and then we'll be looking for your help and some other help from the administration side on whether or not this is the right list of people and if we want to add anybody to it. But this is our proposed initial list of people that would participate in giving us information. This is a web-based tool. So what would happen is the individual would get an email with a code, and so we could have them in groups so we can see how different groups would respond, and it would take them about 45 minutes. So I would encourage all of you to want to participate in this as well. And then what we'll do is we'll bring that information back after we analyze the data, and we'll bring it to you, and hopefully in a workshop we can actively pursue showing you how to prioritize these goals and then setting a plan for your sustainability goals. So that's what we hope to do. It's about a 5-week process from start to finish. Your part of it would be for people to participate in the 45-minute or so online survey, and then to attend a half-day workshop where we would be very active with you, helping you establish goals and giving everybody a chance to review the data that we found. Second part, which we hope to start right away, Beth is going to be a big help in this, is we're going to benchmark two facilities using our Johnson Controls proprietary tool, and this benchmarks the facility against LEED. And we can do this for all of your sites. We do it site by site, not building by building. And because this is the LEED EB program, what happens with this tool is as we add sites, we start to see patterns of operational behavior, and this helps us establish and target LEED credits. Because what we don't want to do, we want to be smart about how we select the LEED credits that you're going to pursue. We don't want to select things that don't make sense for your district or maybe aren't affordable. You know, we want to get a good benchmark and then look at what we can do most effectively. And then part of my job too will be to guide people in this process, as well as our own projects, and capture all the work that the projects, $30 million worth of work, all of that, how that contributes to the LEED points and process. So you have any questions for me about us getting started?
Just one of the concerns, I guess, the long-term goals of possibly coming in and then long-term savings as well, when we look at.
So. I'm not sure I hear the question. I can no. see the thinking going on.
In other words, the savings, you know, the sustainability and the savings when it comes to, you know, there's an upfront cost when it comes to the investment, but then your return on that investment.
Okay, so I think the way I would address this is there's different return on investments when you look at LEED, and a lot of people want to put a percentage on a whole project, but it doesn't really work that way. The cost of investment is generally going to be in your energy projects, and the return is also going to be there. The return that you can calculate. There are other returns if, you know, your schools start to become these better, greener schools. There are school districts that have seen improved test scores. They've seen less absenteeism from school. All kinds of things happen. I can't calculate those for you. I can't tell you what they're going to be. We can give you copies of studies from other schools and some of the things that have happened, but I can't really define that long-term return for you. The one that we can calculate is in the energy savings, and that will be continuous, and that will be actually documented in the performance contract, and those savings will be accounted for regularly. I don't know how often, quarterly. Does that help?
I just want to see that we somehow involve, not necessarily involve, but give information to the students at each of those campuses about, you know, what we're doing, the reasoning behind it, and what we're targeting, and what the overall plan for the entire district is. I know you guys in the past showed us one of those cards that provided for some other project that y'all did as an information tool.
So student engagement is important to you?
Yeah, just and, so that they're involved in the, you know, the reasoning behind our
sure.
spending money from the community, from their parents on this, and just the educational process to involve would be a good thing just to, you know, in terms of.
So this is why we want to call you and have the workshop so we can bring that out. And define as a group, is that a priority? And if so, how do we want to do it? What is it? What do we want it to look like? So that's, I hope we'll get your participation in the workshop and answering the survey.
And also, students are, you know, we've targeted, hopefully, giving assistance on selecting the students to participate in the online survey by next year. So that they are, we are getting their input into this upfront activity. As they, because they have a very distinct view, you know,
yeah.
Your high school students, you know, I mean, they have a great view of, you know, a lot different than you and I do. And so I think it's very, very important that we include them in our population that we're serving.
Right. I think you may have been alluding to that one sheet that we saw in our previous roundtable, in our April roundtable, where one of your associates brought a sheet. And just talk about the auspices of the certification, really what's going on, the discussion of, kind of putting in layman's terms, what the envelope means, all this other stuff. It was a really great one sheet. I think it was two-sided. Very colorful. And it really does, and I'm sure we're getting a lot of this information from the students, but I think it's more just getting the word out as to what we're doing, how we're doing it, and, you know, really your expertise in that area. Not really benchmarking. I think that can fit in one sheet, I believe, unless you guys knock it out somehow.
Two and a half.
Two and a half, there you go.
And along those lines, too, there's another program that we can bring in as part of the phase two delivery. There actually is a curriculum, the whole curriculum that we can bring to the district to at least look to see if there's any interest in implementing that is all about sustainability. It's for all grade levels, and it was developed in cooperation with National Education Association, and we can deliver that as part of phase two as well. That's something you would like for us to bring up some information on as well as in addition to the information we're talking about here today. So we have lots of resources. That's one of the things, you know, on the academic side, we have tremendous resources that are already in place that we can bring to bear on the district.
Thank you.
Right now, questions or
comments?
Discussion. I want to thank y'all for coming out and inviting us. I think this is something we want to be looking at, and it's going to be exciting. Thank you.
Thank y'all very, very much. And it's very good information, and I'm glad that the targets of the people that y'all listed in here, and maybe we'll include a few more, like, you know, some of the students.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to input on that.
Yes.
We do want to get it going.
right. Thank you very much.
Kids love going green, don't they?
Yes.
They all like that.
They do.
Thank you, Alderman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll take this. Actually, I was going to ask the board if we can move on. Discussion and possible action regarding film on the request to the Department of Education to statewide review or audit of TEA audit and review practice. Item 9B.
Item 9B is discussion and possible action regarding formal request to the U.S. Department of Education for statewide review of audit of TEA audit and review practices. Mr. Blanco.
Thank you, Board President Rodriguez, members of the board, Ms. Brigham. Back in January of this year, we wrote a letter to Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education for the United States, regarding some of the testing irregularity issues. We didn't get a response from Mr. Duncan's office, and I discussed previously a follow-up letter, and this is the form that you have there in front of you. It essentially focuses back onto the events in the El Paso Independent School District, and more importantly, the press coverage and the additional scrutiny that we're facing as a result of those events, including that House bill that we talked about earlier today. One of the things that we have proposed in this letter is a request to Mr. Duncan's office that they push forward with the completion of their review of TEA. And we point out the fact that TEA, in a couple of different articles, maybe improperly, I think one time they corrected it, their representatives were saying that they believe this was an isolated border issue, an issue that was limited to El Paso. We think that's incorrect. We also think that it's improper for TEA to be making that type of a statement, reaching that type of conclusion, when they haven't even finished their own review, their internal audit, and review practices. TEA is going to complete that process. The U.S. Department of Education needs to complete that process, and we believe that it should be done on a statewide basis across the board for TEA, and we also are asking the Department of Education to consider a referral to the Office of the Civil Rights within their entity, a review of any findings that TEA has, for whatever reason, focused their review and audits of these testing issues only to El Paso or only to border regions. It appears inappropriate for them to do that. It appears that they might have done that. We don't know. We're asking them to look into that to find out whether or not that is just an excuse that's being put forward by TEA to cover up or look over their own failings with their own audit findings. You know, don't forget that they twice cleared the El Paso School District. It was only through this board's self-reporting of its own findings that we found ourselves in the process and the system with TEA having to work through these problems. Finally, the last thing is a follow-up on Mr. Rodriguez's letter that we approved earlier, that if TEA will not do it, that the U.S. Department of Education consider adopting or requiring some type of training and education programs for boards across the state to help address these issues. This is in a letter format there for you to review. It is copied again to the same groups of individuals, although we did, Hector Rodriguez, your auditor, added the copies to the Office for Civil Rights and to the Regional Office of Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Education. That's a good addition.
The letter, I believe many of you have already read, so I think it's pretty much to a point that the federal government needs to investigate and audit the state. And we should have read that this is not just an isolated incident in a El Paso county, but it's happening in similar county there are similar school districts with the same type of student population, and it needs to be addressed.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to approve our formal request of the Department of Education for statewide wise review or audit of DEA audit rating practices.
And before I second that, Steve, there is only one typo, like the last paragraph on the third, fourth line.
Yes.
El Paso, and it should be an S. It's. Where are we? The first page, last paragraph, fourth line. At the end of that line. Limited to El Paso, yes. And it's.
Okay.
It, apostrophe, yes.
Got it.
I'll second the motion.
I have a motion and a second. Hearing no discussion, I hope that depending what the U.S. Department of Ed comes out, I hope they looked at other districts with similar graphics. No, we're asking them to, but to show that the state has a serious problem. The county has a serious problem. It's a state problem as well.
I, you know, and I think we need to deliver a copy of this letter to, and I think personally, particularly to Pete Gallego. You know, the past, we sent the same letter to Mr. Ward, but while he felt that there was some issue with respect that we need to have a discussion on it, you know, our only representatives that have done anything have been Mary Gonzalez, who put in a bill at the end, and I don't know what the status of it is, to give some kind of, I guess, sameness to the federal mandate on limited English proficient students that have not really yet acquired proficiency in the language and are being, in my opinion, discriminated against, and in essence, the districts are punished because of the way these federal accountability rules apply. So I think, you know, I think we really need to personally try and hand deliver to both Representative Congressman Gallego and Congressman Ward, who are two local congressmen.
I can't deliver it to Ward.
Yeah. And he doesn't seem to be very receptive to this.
One, would you have Mr. Gallego listed on there? So is that
yes.
Please be sent certified mail return receipt with the signature.
The other thing that we need to look at, and we've already had the discussion, I think we need to bring it, is the legislative personnel we want it, not just that way we make a direct contact and not just sending a letter, but it's setting up a meeting, showing our position, letting them know that we're serious about this.
Would it be okay to send a courtesy copy to area school district school board presidents, just for information, so that they know what we're doing?
Yeah.
And good point, Patrick. Mr. Chair, the addition, I think we should send a resolution. We just asked to the rest of the school districts here locally and to the far west part.
Absolutely. So, the vice president of the far west
part. That's right. Who is that?
Oh, wait.
Watch out. But, you know, it's ironic that the focus on our legislators, and like I said, only one of them, Mary Gonzalez, give her credit. That she's addressing the bigger problem, and none of our other legislators are even addressing this discrimination issue to our limited English proficient students. She's the only one that has taken that on.
The others are trying to single out.
Yeah, the others are trying to single El Paso County out.
You know, even if they don't agree with us, they need to at least respond.
Yeah.
You know, win, lose, draw, just respond to us. You know, not like we're talking into an empty hole.
I have a motion and a second. There's no other discussion.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Wholeheartedly, yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
A little louder, Patsy.
Right now,
Item 5A is the preliminary budget projections report. Mrs. Aguirre.
We're on item 11.
Good evening, Board President Rodriguez, board members, Ms. Brigham, Dr. Bellamy's. This evening, we'll be presenting preliminary budget projections for the 2013-14 school year. We are estimating that we'll be adopting the budget next month in June, and we'll provide these are preliminary projections. As I presented at the last month's presentation, the enrollment projections for the 2013-14 school year is a total enrollment of 6,162 students. That is an increase from our enrollment reported to through PIMS at 6,067 students. The per capita allocations with which the campuses were awarded or allotted their budgets is at the elementary level a $90 per student, middle school at $100 per student, at the high school at $115. We also have allocations per enrollment number of counseling, nurse, administration, the state comp ed funds, as well as the high school allotment for the secondary level. I will note that the state comp ed is calculated by the economically disadvantaged numbers that are reported through the PIMS system. In addition to these allocations, they also receive funding for UIL, athletics, custodial Title I funds, and library funds. On this slide, you'll see the impact of tax rates on the average homeowner. In 2012-13, for this current school year, our average appraised value for our home was $144,227. For the 2013-14 school year, the cap has appraised your average home at $149,209. Once you consider the $15,000 homestead exemption, taxable value of a home in the Canutillo district is at $134,209. You take the tax rate that we have currently proposed of $1.17 for maintenance and operation and 32 cents for the INS, bringing it to a total of the $1.49. You are looking at your average homeowner to be paying a total of $1,999 per year for the taxes contributed to the school district. This is an increase of $164 from last year. Just a note to mention there is, back if you recall from like 2010-11, our average home was at about $130,000. Minus the 15%, $15,000 homestead exemption, we were getting less value. The factors that are considered in projecting our revenues for this coming school district is, of course, our average daily attendance of 5,802 students. Again, our enrollment, as I've mentioned, is 6,067. However, we only get the funding for the students that are reported in school. Property taxes that we are considering are maintenance and tax and operations of $1.17 and interest and sinking for 32 cents.
This 32 cents is an increase from the 25 cent debt service that we've been holding on to for the last 3 years. This is the first increase that our community will see affected by that bond election that we held a couple of years ago.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Martha, on this 5,802, the ADA, is that as the PIMS report?
Yes, this, the ADA I began my calculations with is the PIMS snapshot date of October. I don't add until I have a final projection in June, because that is what the state's going to fund this for. And so even if we might be a little higher right now, we need to make sure that they settle on the actual number.
Okay. Thank you.
On the 2013 projected property values, they have come in preliminarily at $1.7 billion. What does that mean to our district? We take that about the dollar amount of property of appraised value divided by $100 per home value, and you multiply it by $1.17, which gives us a $20.2 million for maintenance and operation. And on the debt service side, we have a projected revenue of $5.5 million for debt service.
Question on that?
Yes.
What sort of increase is that from previous year's property value?
Our property value is at about a 7% increase.
7%.
Which was what I had projected preliminarily without actually getting the, but we've been on target, you know, with the, yeah, lucky sounds. Any more questions on this one? So what do these factors mean to us? Our projected revenues for the 2013-14 school year are as follows. Our local sources are estimated at coming in at $21.6 million. Of course, we do consider other revenue that comes in aside from our property valuations when we state our local service sources. Our state sources are projected to come in at $26.5 million. And our federal sources, which primarily fund our food service program, are coming in at $4.5 million. That is a total of $52.8 million in revenue projected for the next school year. That is a difference or an increase of $1.3 million from last school year, or our current school year. I would like to note there's a blue box at the bottom. We haven't, the legislature has not finished, but we are doing some assumptions based on some formulas provided by TEA. And we're projecting that we may see an additional $1.6 million, which is never bad news. It's always good news.
Is that the best case scenario?
That is, I would say, the conservative scenario provided by Omar, who is gives us our data and, you know, formulas.
So that's conservative?
Yes.
Okay.
Only because he's always conservative, and you know, that's, I believe it's a good, yes.
Thank you.
So this slide will show projected revenue less expenditures for 2013-14. Estimated revenues, as I stated earlier, is $52.8 million. Our preliminary expenditures, which next presentation will actually have a breakdown by organization, by function, and by object code, but they are right now coming in at $51.5 million. So that is estimated revenues over expenditures of $1.2 million.
And that's without this possible increase?
That's without, yes. I did provide a handout with two slides.
Mr. Chair, sorry, Marcella.
Sure.
Do you guys remember when the cuts were made, the initial $5.5 million that was cut by the legislature, before we passed the TRE, we had to let go of 32 teachers and some other measures, plus some others, did pass. But if you think about that, 32 teachers at roughly $50,000 a pop is how much, Martha?
It's around that
1.6 million.
So that's what we're getting back
from the
state.
Yeah, what we had cut. Of course, yeah, we got it back from our TRE. So
we hadn't had the TRE.
Well, it's not just that. There's no interest in gaining that. It's just
absolutely.
Took it away. We'll bring it back.
Yeah. I did provide a handout with two slides. Originally on Friday, slide 9 did not have, it was just a listing of priorities. And so I have provided a handout. Is it on your?
Yes,
it is?
Yes. one of the handouts of the school budget.
This,
it's the
last
page.
Oh, okay.
I
missed. It's the first big one.
It looks like this, Ms. Rose.
Okay, I can see her since.
Did you? Okay. So originally you had seen just a listing of different budget priorities from the DACA, the District Administrative Advisory Committee, program requests, and then administration. What I've done is presented to you that breakdown with actual funding source and whether or not that has already been part of the actual budget that I just presented with expenditures. And so as you look at the first slide, you see that the District Advisory Committee and program requests, some of the ones noted, were professional development for staff, more better understanding of the existing software programs that they have. The funding source for that can be used is the Title I Part A and the Title II, which are all federal funding, as well as the state comp ed funds. I put a check next to that because funding has been allocated at the campus level, as well as at central office for that type of service. Instructional materials as well. I've noted the funding source that is already included within that budget that I've presented. Academic tutors is another one. Fine arts. They've emphasized that they'd like to see more funding allocated to the elementary level from that School of Music funding, which we have allocated $120,000 for the program.
District-wide,
yes. Library books, that's also a local allocation that we have had in place for a couple of years. Classroom furniture, as well as college textbooks. So if you have, you notice we've got the funding sources, and again, it's already part of the budget. It wouldn't be in addition to. Other items that were requested is athletic needs for the new proposed middle school softball and baseball program. And that comes around $26,000 for this beginning year. That would also have to be allocated through the local budget. The technology accessibility, Wi-Fi infrastructure needs, that has been an ongoing project for the last couple of years, and I don't have a dollar amount, but I am working with Mr. Flores so that we can get a clear understanding of how much money would be needed. Yes?
Pardon me, Mr. Chair. On that one, are we looking, is that also from the IMA funds?
Yes, we do have funding allotted through the instructional materials allotment.
Okay, thank you.
Laptops at Northwest for the incoming freshmen. The original request was for 100,000 for 100 laptops, but I don't believe we need 100 laptops for Northwest. That would be taken out of the high school allotment fund if approved by the board. And then lastly, mariachi uniforms for the Northwest Early College. The request was came in at $15,000, which could very likely be included in that School of Music funding that we give, if that were your choice to.
On top of the 120?
No. Within that 120 budget, we would allocate $15,000 of that for the mariachi uniforms, if approved.
May I ask you how many uniforms are you planning to buy?
I don't have that information. The only thing that was provided was that they wanted $15,000. I would venture to say most trajes, by the time you buy the hat and all that, it's about $1,000.
Per
person.
You know, that's getting really big. Did y'all read about it in the Lone Star magazine this last month? I mean, it is so big.
Mr. Chair, Marcia, how much is the fine arts being allocated?
$120,000.
All fine arts?
For the School of Music, yes. And then Mr. Ramos, I'm going to assume that he gets for the different music teachers and then they develop a budget for the needs.
One of the other things that I know the board has requested is separate and apart from that is the sound system at the auditorium.
Oh, that's another
thing. I would even suggest the sound system here, get the same sound engineer
system here,
to fix the sound. And true sound engineer.
And I'm talking that we need to get somebody out there to evaluate to see even what the cost. I mean,
while you're at that, I just have the foremost thing.
Yeah, we need to add speakers at the
It could be as simple as changing the mics out too.
It could be, or you know what? It's the placement of those speakers that's an issue. So I think they need to add additional speakers at the front of the press box down to the. Yeah, because when we go and have graduation there, you can't really, people can hear depending where you're at.
We'll definitely begin the research. It sounds like if we add the three different systems, we might be looking at
what I think the you need to do is, one, the auditorium, really we need to... And not just speaker. I'm not talking about replacing the speakers that are there. I'm talking
evaluate.
Engineering.
Yes.
Evaluate.
Because when we had the choir, I want to listen to the choir, and I purposely sat at the very back, and it's just
it's not good.
There. When we go to the conferences at either NSBA or PASB, we sit at the way back, and we still hear it
like you were right
like
there.
We were up front. It's we need to have somebody professionally get that.
Like how engineering, or how
whatever it is.
There's that other one.
Well, so there's Sonic Ranch here, and they can do a lot of that.
Yeah, there's a couple of nice local companies that can do that.
And the other issue is the stage needs. Not just their lighting, but they need batons. They don't have any
batons
for scenery. Yeah, the drama people have never had that. We've had it
years now. Maybe I talked with Mr. Jeffries over.
Mr. Jeffries needs to be contacted about that. Okay. Maybe it's time to forget that $1.6 million from the state that we can actually give them some funds and maybe the dance.
If you're talking about the stage at the high school, I believe there's also concerns about the projector
and
the position of the screen. That needs to be calibrated because it's an issue.
So if you'll ask them for that, the other issue at the auditorium and that we've neglected for 7 years is we need to have a different kind of lighting that can be dimmed. And because we can't leave any lights on because we either turn them off or they're all on. Auditoriums need to have some
total assessment.
Or add a couple of additional lights down the side where we can dip them down so that, we had one person fall down when the auditorium was first opened. And we had a function there, somebody fell.
So, pretty much an overall evaluation of the
auditorium.
Okay.
Girl, mom, or something.
This next slide is presenting to you proposed budget priorities. Brought forth by the administration, email archive services. We're looking at about a $40,000 to $50,000 end. And it could certainly provide more information regarding that, but the amount given there was about $40,000 to $50,000.
One time?
Yeah. Is that a one-time fee? But the email archive services?
That's a yearly?
Is it
It's a server plus it's going to be a yearly fee.
So a one-time of 50 and a yearly.
Oh, the yearly, probably about 12.
Okay.
Now. The email contact.
The special education ARD software. This tool would greatly improve our ARD documentation processing, which in the library.
This is also
improvements that we need to do. This is something that we need to consider. This would be part of her existing special ed budget. It would not be an additional amount. This is already within the budget.
Did we buy recently?
No, I believe the bid was out. I don't believe there's been a selection made.
May I?
I can give you some information on that.
Am I? Here he is.
The bid is ready to go out. We did talk to Janine Hammack, and she recommended, and I think she talked to Ms. Brigham about that. We're going to post it the first 2 weeks of June, so it'll close the last week of June. That way the new director for special ed will be in here. And that person can help evaluate it and make sure that person gets what they want.
Mm-hmm. What does that person start?
I believe it's the last week of June, that's what we need to...
June, right.
So that's why we held off on it, so we could actually do the evaluation that week.
It's actually training and all that.
Then the next two items, which will be presented following with by Ms. Carrasco, is a personnel request based on the campus needs, campus and department needs assessments. And those came in at $381,625, I believe information was shared with you all.
$381.
And then the compensation package coming in at $715,000. And I want to elaborate there and want Ms. Carrasco to share with that information with you.
Mr. Chair, I've got a comment. And it's, you know, I hate to be the clanging gong, but it's budget time again. And, you know, we've had some hard times. We've had rough seas. By policy, we should have, as a board, set goals. We didn't have a superintendent. Now we do. And the goals, by policy, are to drive to budget. And we haven't really had that. So I just, you know, for practicality, I hope that maybe we can have some kind of sharing with our superintendent possibly on these, but, you know, on our goals, that we could somehow begin to come into compliance with our policy in doing that. And I know, I can see that it's not like we've got a bunch of new stuff. I mean, it's pretty much standard. But when I look at professional development for staff, instructional materials, as a board, we're not seeing where that's going. And we're not seeing that the professional development for the staff is leading to this outcome, which is leading to the next thing. And, you know, the organization of it is not what it should be. And so I hope that we can get on track with that.
And I will mention that, you know, although we did not have the, you know, district goals set due to the circumstances, mm-hmm. The campuses did work on their improvement plans. They did develop goals mirroring what were existing goals mm-hmm. were in place. And so we did try, you know, we didn't sway too far off what the set goals were.
Them.
Yes. But you are correct. We definitely need to make sure that we're aligned.
And that, you know, what we had last year, I know that as a board, we did set out goals. It sticks in my mind so clearly as Patsy Mendoza's grandparents reading to to children. And I know that didn't happen. And yeah, it's not even a big dollar item. And that somehow we need to go through our goals from last year, because we did set goals. They just came after the budget, actually. That, you know, they're not just pie in the sky. They're real, they're meaningful. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I also have a comment. How can we, I know that we've discussed this in the past, but how can we make sure, or as a board, personally, I would like to request that the goals and objectives be online, available online.
The improvement plan? Can we do that in it?
I mean, something that...
We can absolutely do it now with the... we're going live on June 15th with the new...
June
15th? Website. But if that's going to take... The individual departments are going to have to put that in.
No.
Actually,
don't you have it?
No, but it's...
Why individual departments?
Well, they're the ones that hold it.
Well, they're available through the K drive, the leadership.
Right. But I mean, as far as, you know, any of the activities, there's just the goals,
right.
And objectives.
Entire improvement plan.
Can you send us a copy so we can view it first, and then we determine as a board or as a committee to make the recommendation what we want available? Or you as the administration make a recommendation what you want available online? Okay. Just, I mean, we want something available. Okay, thank you.
Next This next slide is budget considerations. These numbers have changed. I was pending some information to, but the ones on, posted on the screen are correct. Estimated revenues over expenditures, as I said, stated earlier, were at $1.2 million. Additional budget considerations. Increase in utility costs. We are looking at a $270,000 increase in utilities this next coming year. And because of the energy management project, and I did work with Mr. Bailey to get these figures presented correctly. The energy management project lease payments, we have $300,000 that we will be due this coming year. The health cost increase, and I know that HR will be presenting information on our health insurance program. However, we're projecting that we do need to increase our contribution, both as a district and then also as employees. The projection provided was at 8.15%. And so the district will take on the 4.15% and then 4% increase to the employees' contribution. What does that mean to us? It means an additional, we currently are paying $370 per employee per month, a total of $4,536. With that increase, we're looking at an additional $188 per month per employee. So that means to the employee, to our district, a total of $75,296 for this current month, for this coming year, because it'll be a 6 month period. But thereafter, our district will absorb a $150,000 increase to health insurance.
Okay. Which reflects that we have in the packet of $150,000.
Right.
Okay.
The $150,000 is yearly.
That's yearly. Under the compensation package increase, that was proposed of $715,000, as I mentioned earlier, and then personnel requested, to include stipends in the personnel requested, is $381,000. That's a total of $1.7 million in additional budget considerations that have been brought forward. The difference between the 1.2 that we have currently, revenues over expenditures, and the 1.7 that are being proposed, we have a shortage of $470,000. Now, as I mentioned when I began my presentation, we are seeing that the legislature will be allocating additional funding to the district, but it is at your discretion which you decide is approved as far as the compensation package, the other budget priorities, and as we work through the budget.
Mr. Hernandez.
The other issue that we need to probably look at is we had budgeted $150,000 from the priorities last year for our bus, and weren't able to buy it because it was not enough. We had underestimated how much buses were going to cost us. And so we probably need to take a look at that, and maybe we can get our...
what do you think, add another 50 or 75?
I don't know. I mean, when we went to last year's TASB,
what that could
was somewhere between 225 and 250, depending what we, what size we wanted it.
Then
whether
it's
between
52
mention. To 60 CD dependent.
Then don't you think we budget high?
Yeah.
And if we have leftovers?
Because that's what it was last year.
If there's some leftover, they buy the trailer to pull behind it? To
yeah,
put the instruments and the stuff in it?
Yeah.
In addition, you had allocated or committed $80,000 to the marquee that still has
right.
been unspent. These funds are still in the budget that will be just
right.
pulled
just
over to the fund balance
so
again.
The bus is still there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 150.
Mm-hmm. I think we
it's 150 for the bus, wasn't it?
Right.
Add another 100 to it.
Probably.
That'll have to be through a committee when we do the GASB 54 and commit the through the resolution.
Right.
The other thing we're going to have to look at committing to land purchases.
So to get it correct, $100,000 is what you're
recommending?
Don't you
think that's appropriate for?
I think we should put that on our priorities list to see how where we can come
based
up.
Based on the list.
Yeah.
Our own bus drivers are certified now?
Yes.
Yes.
So I heard say the district, there's a...
I had a preliminary, who did I ask? Was it you, Marcia?
I think so.
About that the district spends approximately $50,000 a year. On charter buses.
Yeah, and this month's warrant list, we had a charter bus.
If we had our own charter bus, granted, we're still going to spend, it's not going to cost us nothing, because we have to spend fuel and the driver, but quite substantially less than having to pay $50 a year. So,
we need to look at a long-term plan to maybe where we get to.
I think two eventually would be, Isleta has two, I think, or three. Socorro, they don't have the charter buses, but they have like, I don't know, 50 activity buses.
Is there any difference in the way that they're paid for in an activity bus or a charter bus? You know, is there any difference in how we can pay for them?
I believe there's a lease, there's also a lease program.
But, no, I mean, like funding, does it all have to be local?
Yeah.
It can't be anything, so. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question.
What would you say?
Ms. Aguirre, in light of tonight's parent issue, I know that on the first page here of your presentation, we had the per capita allocations, and there's an additional funding allocated to campuses for UIL, athletics, and custodial.
Yes.
I'd like to see a report on what's gone wrong at Garcia.
Okay.
And I am so shocked and embarrassed, really.
And I did speak to the parent, but I will provide a report to you as well as the parent.
And that we're budgeting. I mean, I'm absolutely humiliated that we'd be asking kids to bring our own toilet paper to school. That's horrible. Yeah, could you fundraise so the other kids could have some, too? Yeah, it's unacceptable. So there's either a miscommunication, something's wrong, and I'd very much like to know exactly what that is. And
I have a feeling that there's
Ms. Brigham, I'd also like that parent have a letter written to her with that explanation.
All right, I got her number. I got her email. I sent a phone number. Okay. I already asked her.
We'll take her.
Thank you.
Moving on, the next slide is the budget adoption timeline. We're very close to it. we'll bring forward to you the compensation package for your consideration. Ms. Carrasco will be doing that after me, with an expectation of perhaps the June 18th or June 25th board meetings for a public hearing and adoption of the budget for the 2013-14 school year. At that point, if you'd like, I can go ahead and bring the breakup of the allocations by object, location, and function code to the Finance Committee, and then as well bring it into the actual board meeting.
I do have a question.
Sure.
The proposed rate change on tax, 7 cent increase,
mm-hmm.
was that communicated to the voters? Was it?
Oh, yes, sir.
And is there any thought, I mean, what's the amount that we're looking to capture with that amount increase, and do we need that at this point?
Yes, but the financial advisors do a review of our estimations on our EDA that the district will be receiving, as well as we look at our schedules of bond payments that we have to make. And so based on the tax collections that we have proposed, as well as the EDA that's coming in, the financial advisors are set the tax rate for the IMS. And so we did hold the line for 3 years when we were expecting it to just be a 1 year relief. But at this point, it is necessary for us to begin.
I think that needs to be communicated, that we did hold the line for 3 years and not increase after the first year, because
that's promising.
I think that that 7 cents, even as small as it is, it will be taken from the $1,500, $150 increase on the home.
Do you think it would be prudent to write in the admissions newsletter that, you know, this is per our bond and we've actually given you relief?
Because it is directly related to the program, so we can certainly.
And what would our effective tax rate be, Martha?
$1.49.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's check. If you remember back in 2011, we told the public that it was going to be 8 cents.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Had we followed through on the increase after the first year, how much have we really saved? And maybe that number also needs to communicate there, because I'm just concerned that it may be misconstrued that we're raising taxes and we're seeing these increase in property taxes and we're not being proper stewards, where we actually are, we're just taking advice from our financial advisors to make sure we make bond payments on
time. Right.
And one other thing, Chair. If we get the same projected growth that we did last year, I think that 7 cents we're going to end up
it
actually
might
having spill over into our INS fund balance, so that the following year, when we ask for it, when we're supposed to get another 8 cents, it's probably going to be more like 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I agree too.
I think we are going to be. So I think probably instead of the 16 we told, we're probably going to be more like around 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So.
The question I have regarding to the comment that the parent made on our funding formula when it comes to ADA as well as campus space, mm-hmm. I thought we had a different metric.
We the campus receives funding based on enrollment, not on ADA. The district receives funding by ADA. There was no reduction to her allocation, and mm-hmm. so we just need to clarify, and I'll provide a report to you as well.
Maybe not a reduction, but I guess the question was, what is the calculation on funding? Is it equal across all elementary?
It's based on square footage, yes.
Based on square footage, not on the actual.
That's correct. And of course, Mr. Rodriguez did do, because the situation had come up, we did address it. He did do a study to see other options and how to estimate or allot funds for custodial. And so we have a new projection or formula that will be used for the next coming school year that we're hoping will assist.
And it brings into the amount of students at the building.
We spend plenty of money. I mean, I look at that warrant list every month, and there's at least 8 pages of custodial supplies.
Oh, absolutely.
But I know there's a lot.
I think I'd be just as concerned as that parent was to be fundraising for toilet paper.
Right. The information provided to them definitely, you know, would concern anyway.
And I would like to see that money returned to those,
definitely,
to the fund that it should be in, to the fund fund.
Let's wait and get a report from Mr. Aguirre, and then we'll suggest we go from there, because we're basing it on, of course, we heard one side, and let's wait and hear it from the other side.
Any other questions at this point?
No questions.
Thank you, Martha.
And just a little quick report. We did have a good meeting with our rating agencies, and so we'll hope we know you're back soon.
I believe they did have a couple of documents that they requested late Thursday, so that's mm-hmm. probably what's delayed their response. I did have a meeting with our underwriters and their legal counsel to make sure that due diligence conference call was what it was. And it was basically a mini conference ratings meeting again. They all know very well that was held this morning. And so I'm hoping that we should hear something soon.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
I'll take the
Item 5B is report, presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding 2013-14 compensation. Ms. Carrasco and Ms. Cadena.
Good evening, board members, board president, trustees, Ms. Brigham. I'd like to, before we get started, welcome Ms. Muscarena from TASB. And she, it's that time of the year again, and so she's here visiting us and is going to be presenting or assisting in presenting the compensation plan for our next school year. This year, what we did is that we did contract with TASB for a maintenance agreement. And what that means is that after last year, when we did the major overhaul to our pay plan, and we went ahead and we had a 3.5 increase and a 4% increase for our auxiliary services, we went ahead and developed or contracted with TASB for maintenance. We wanted to maintain our competitive advantage that we had gained last year or this year, and we want to go ahead and maintain that. And I think that was the direction of the board to make sure that we were looking at the benchmark jobs that we discussed any special pay problems with TASB, and we've done all of that. And Lucy's here this evening to go over what the recommendations for this year are.
Well, I'd like to say thank you again for having me back here. I especially like being here tonight because I think that the presentation that I have will certainly provide you the information of the robust pay increases the district provided and the improvement in the competitive market that the district is seeing now. As Martha mentioned, we are now into the maintenance phase, which is primarily just ensuring that pay systems are maintained, that we make the adjustments to the pay structures comparable to what we're seeing as far as the peer market or peer group, and that we provide the general pay increase that's also comparable with the peer group. So with that said, again, thank you, board president, board members, and Ms. Brigham for having me here tonight. I'm gonna talk a little bit about these system objectives. We talked a lot about this, I'm not gonna dwell too much. I refer to them as the three R's. It's going to be your recruit, retain, and reward employees. And the district has certainly done that with properly designed pay structures, which we did last year for this 12-13. The district's pay is competitive within or relative to the market. But as far as the pay for the job value, we have created a pay system that provides comparable pay among the similar jobs. And it also keeps your employees paid within a controlled range variance to prevent overpayment or underpayment of jobs for the job value. The controlling cost portion of that is we also have a system where you're able to provide equitable method of pay increases, determining those pay increases and also setting them on an annual basis along with being budget driven. So that's the take on the three R's. The next slide is we did a quick poll for our members in April, and the question was, it was a series of questions, and one of the questions was, do you anticipate to provide a pay increase for the 2013-14 school year? And so as you can see here, we had 437 respondents. And of those, 79% responded that they were considering providing employees a pay increase. And you can see that 22 responded as likely not. Of those that responded, the increased method that they are considering providing a pay increase is an increase to base salary, meaning that it is a percentage of a mid, and it's not a single supplement. You can see that the one-time lump sum payment is reflected there. It's a small amount of 4%. And then a group, 10%, responded providing some other type of increase grant that we don't know what that is, but we did have that response. Then another question was, how much of a pay raise does the district expect to provide? And you can see in this slide that we had the largest response as far as the general pay increase is the 2 to 2.5%. The second largest group is the 2.6 to 3%. So with both of those groups, we are looking at 64% of those that responded indicating that the districts are considering at least between a 2 to 3% general pay increase. When we drilled down to the ESC specifically, this information is kind of implied. Four districts in ESC 19 responded to that quick poll. And of those four districts, three districts responded that they were considering a pay increase between 2 and 2.5%, with one district indicating that possibly a 3%. So this kind of gives us an idea of what districts are considering across the state as we work with districts during this budget process. The next slide, this is basically just a snapshot of all the information that we received at the time that the pay data was sent to us. It's a breakdown of the salaries that are paid. This does not include overtime. It does not include anything aside from the stipends paid to teachers and the master's degree stipends. So again, anything as far as overtime or other types of costs related to personnel are not included in this. Your current payroll. Oh, yes.
I see a discrepancy on your bottom line here.
Yes.
That one says 34 million, but one that we've got in our hand that just got passed out is 33 million, the bottom line. In the dark highlighted up there, you see the 34 million? With the change behind it.
Yes.
Versus this one's 33 million.
No, okay, that's separate. This is in your PowerPoint presentation, okay? And what you're looking at, so yes, in what you're looking at as far as the total cost, this total cost estimate of 33 million, that does not include the coaching stipends that are listed.
So that's the difference.
That's the difference,
okay,
yes,
thank you.
Yes. Because in the proposed or implementation costs, it's only affecting base salary and not just stipends.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So again, the cost is 34.4, and this is including master's degree stipends and, of course, those coaching stipends. And there is the cell phone allowances that are being paid. What's notable of this snapshot is, of course, the largest cost related to your payroll budget is your teacher group, which is at 59%. And then again, they do also represent your largest employee group as a staff count of 47%. And basically what this also confirms is that the cost, the improvement cost to your pay is going to be driven primarily by your teacher, the improvement to your teachers, because they are the largest.
Do you see this over-indexing, so to speak, across the state?
Yes, it's very consistent where the teacher portion of the payroll in the count, staff count, is over 50%, close to 60 and maybe even 65%. Next, this includes your market group. We did look at all of the ESC 19 school districts that participated in our
survey. One district, Fort Hancock, actually, we did bring them in, and I apologize, they're not listed in this market group, but they are in your market comparisons as listed when we look at your teacher market detail and your private detail.
Which school district was it?
Fort Hancock. Teacher market. If you recall, last year when we did the pay study, the district's comparison to market in the group, the district was next to the last in that comparison group when we did the pay study in the 2011-12 school year. The board, thanks to the board, which approved a 3.5% general pay increase, you can see that the district is now third highest paying district in this market group. That is a significant improvement in your teacher pay. So when we take a look at the starting teacher salary, the district is at 3% above the market median. Now, I also did a market comparison at the 75th percentile. You can see that the 75th percentile comparison, you are at still above market at 1% starting teacher pay. Now, the reason that I broke this down to the 75th percentile is that basically you are competing in that top tier now of the group. And I want to make sure that the district maintains that position because you made great strides to get here. And so I want to make sure that we keep that comparison as we continue to work with the district to ensure that we stay a little bit above or at that 75th percentile market position. You can see that at year 15, the district is competitive at all years, at all five-year intervals, except for at year 15, where the district lags a little bit. And certainly we can continue to monitor that and make sure that the district does not, that comparison does not drop too much to where it's too costly that it's too fixed. But overall, you can see the great strides in that 3.5% improvement to teacher pay. The next slide is basically the same information that was in that previous teacher market slide. But you can see this as far as the columns, the solid columns, are the district at each five-year interval up to 20 years. And the solid green line, which is that top line, that is the 75th percentile. And you'll notice that the district pay begins to, there's a gap that is has developed a little bit at years 10 and at years 15 on that 75th percentile comparison. And then on the comparison to the median, which is that second line or that yellow line, you are above the market and are right below that market median value at your 15th year. So I just want to make sure that we continue to monitor and be set to make adjustments for next year if we need to. On your critical shortage area stipend comparison, the district, again, these are math, science, bilingual, special ed, and ESL. The district is below the market median at each one of these levels.
Just real quick on that one. Mm-hmm. You look at our 15-year salary and our 20-year salary comparison to market.
Yes.
I guess what's your analysis and recommendation? About 3-4 years ago, we had a problem within our first-year teacher. Mm-hmm. Back in that, we left that back. Now it's looking like the experienced teachers. It's balancing
and
different.
And it's dropped a little bit. I would say that you don't have, I'm not recommending adjustments in particular years for this year.
It seems like most districts are going to provide a 2% pay increase in the area. If you're able to continue with that, I think that the district will be okay. If you provide anything less than that, then we are going to have to make some additional adjustments at those years. Again, it's a balance of making sure that the district is competitive at the starting salary and then competitive at the years where you have here some of your veteran teachers, and again, 10 and 15 year mark. But the 2% general pay increase should continue to sustain the district's competitiveness.
But the discussion we had a while back, and now we're starting to lead on that 1 to 5 year, and I think, yeah, we can sustain, but would we have to address it by, or how do we address it if the board wanted to lead in that area? Because I think I don't want to speak to the board, but I think we want to lead in all areas of those. Mm-hmm. And be fair.
We can model additional adjustments. So the way for improvements in those years would be to provide an additional adjustment close to those years so that the salary is above market, comparable to the above market or at market or above market at the other 5 year increments. Just like we did last year when we added all of those additional adjustments to improve the schedule, then we would do similar, but it would be targeted beginning with maybe possibly 10 through 15 years.
And looking at, yes.
If you take a look at your teacher model development, model one, where we could begin to add additional adjustments would be beginning at that 10-year mark. Your 10-year mark proposed is 48.5. The 10-year comparison at the median is 47.705. That's without the districts knowing what the districts in the area are going to be recommending for pay increase. So we can model a teacher schedule that would include additional adjustments. It would just be at the district's direction. If we provide a 2% general pay increase, I believe that the district will be positioned well. And we can certainly make improvements next year if we need to. But I think it would be a little bit preliminary possibly to go in and make some adjustments right now. I would say that my recommendation would be to make improvements in your math stipend because the district is really below the market. The median stipend for math, if you go to the page we're at, is $2,500. The district is currently, and we just implemented this last year, a $1,000 stipend for math. I think that to be more competitive and a little bit more strategic in the areas that the district is really needing to be competitive in, especially with a veteran teacher in math and science, that you would want to make the improvement there. And then let's make the improvement to your schedule if needed for next year.
Would you also recommend the science, secondary science?
Secondary science and
math and science, both.
And at a minimum, the recommendation would be to take the district 2,000. Ideally, it would be best if the district was to go to $2,500 stipend for math and science.
What about having the certification or the required for dual credit?
We are making that recommendation in the needs assessment portion. Yes. I will go ahead and go over that.
Yes, we are.
Ms. Governor, don't, you've mentioned the 10 and 15 years. Don't those teachers get an automatic adjustment with the rest of the teachers?
Yes, everybody receives the same general pay increase.
So why are we...
We're not recommending additional adjustments this year.
If they've been receiving all along,
Because we've made adjustments, we made improvements to your schedule last year. We really targeted improving your schedule at the starting through 5 and 10 year mark. And we made the adjustments down through 15 years, but they weren't as strong as the market shifted or some of the other districts made. The district being below at that year 15 by, which is right now, the district is currently at year 15.
Well, no, I understand that we have a lot of veteran teachers here.
That's correct. But when you take a look at that market comparison, when you do the 15-year mark, you are at 98% of market. Okay? It's a little bit below market, but it's not, you're 2 points below the market.
Well, so that's why I'm saying we're not that behind.
You're not, that's why. That's what I'm saying. I'm not recommending adjustments right now. Now, I'm saying next year, let's monitor. If you truly fall behind more, then let's make the adjustment then. But I'm saying this year, let's make targeted improvements. Let's put your money in the math and science departments where recruiting for those individuals with that certification, whether they're veteran or at least 5 year mark, that's going to be the best value for the district, making the investment and the improvement in math and science. Okay? I understand that there are 25 math teachers receiving the stipend and 14 science. So if we do a 2,000, that would be an additional $1,000 cost to this number. So we're looking at a $39,000 cost.
I have another question. I don't know if this is one of your recommendations through needs assessment, Dr. Since we're then, of course, math and science is one of those specialties. The same thing is going to go for social studies. The same thing is going to go for English. What are we going to do about those two subjects? It's end of course. Those are special courses that are going to be tested by.
Well, right now we're doing, like you said, the focus for this coming year is in the math and science. And like I said, that just started last year because we had zero. So we're trying to catch up to the market. And that's why we're doing the maintenance plan every year to look at those areas and in different areas. For example, right now when you're talking about the 15-year, 10-year, that we're only the 2% off. Next year when we look at it, it may be 4%. So then that's a target area that needs to be looked at. So that's the whole purpose of the maintenance, and I do want to continue doing this maintenance of our pay structures.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I agree with the math and science, but we're going to have the, depending on TA, whatever subjects are going to be tested on. But social studies is not going to go away, English is not going to go away.
And those are things that we can look at, coming up.
I would like to say that the reason that we have these stipends, these are identified by TEA as critical shortage areas. Mm-hmm. And so you have a less number of applicants with these certifications. That's, certainly the district wants to establish a stipend for the other core areas. The district can certainly do so. But most districts, and my work with the majority of districts across the state,
establish stipends for the critical shortage areas that would have been identified by TEA only. So social studies and English are not identified and are not designed as far as receiving a stipend. Okay, that's just for information. The other areas, so again, the recommendation on my part would be no less than a $2,000 recommendation for math and science. Certainly $2,500 would be ideal.
You mean 2,000 total, not 2,000 additional?
Yes. That's correct. 2,000 total would be an incremental increase.
And we have 39 people in both of those?
Yes. Now, the other incentives that we look at are the master's degree. The district made also a change in the direction of the master's degree, where the district is now providing a $2,000 degree stipend to teachers with a master's in the subject area. I've been doing some work with other districts in El Paso County, and two other school districts actually are going in that direction as well, shifting their master's degree to a master's degree in the content area. So kudos for the district, because I think that you certainly were out there in the forefront of going in that direction, and a couple of other districts are following with you. I'm going to move on to your teacher schedule development model one. This is a 2% general pay increase. This schedule takes you to a $45,900 starting salary, and it provides all of your teachers a $1,000 general pay increase. No teacher is going to be above the range maximum. They will all be eligible for this pay increase. The second model is a 1.5%. We have a starting salary of $45,650. Now, as part of a maintenance, we don't necessarily go in and make all of these additional adjustments first, because we made such improvement last year, and so I want to maintain that and then plan on next year. We have to go in and let's make those adjustments, additional adjustments next year. The reason that we are having additional adjustments at the years 15 through 19 in the 1.5% model is that the $750 is less than the salary with that $750 at years 15 through 19 would be lower than what your current schedule salary would be. So to maintain at least that amount or a little bit more, I went in and I added some additional adjustments, because a $750 pay increase does not improve that salary amount at those years because of the increments between the years are greater than $750. So again, that's the reason for those additional adjustments. What I want to elaborate on a little bit is more the summary comparison that you see here. We have the 11-12 market comparisons that we had by job group, and then we have the 12-13, and this is where you can see the results of the improvements, the pay increases that were provided last year. You can see the improved market position for the district. The teacher is improved 6 points, went from 97% of market last year to 3% above market. You also see that your campus leadership improved from 94% to 97%. And then one of the greatest improvements, this one along with your auxiliary group, 8-point improvement in
the market is your administrator who went from 89% of market to 97%. Your professional group made a great improvements there, 6-point improvement from 89% to 95%. And again, it continues on down. Your information technology group, this is a group that we saw the least improvements, but this is an area that I want to also take a look at to ensure that the district is competitive and paid with these jobs. And then the other largest improvement, as I mentioned previously, is your auxiliary group, 8-point improvement in the market. This was a result of that 4% general pay increase that you provided to this group overall. So clearly a significant improvement in overall market position in pay for the district as a result of the board's generosity in those pay increases. The next is the Model 1 Cost Estimate Implementation Plan, and you can see that this cost is $750,000. It's a 2.5% general pay increase. We do have some additional or increases that are noted under the Implementation Equity Adjustments. In addition to that 2.5% general pay increase, and these are the largest being 46 employees in the auxiliary group. We've made some targeted adjustments to your bus monitors and bus drivers. We provided an additional adjustment in pay for that group because they did fall a little bit behind in the market comparison in pay. The range and the structure is competitive, but the average pay for your bus drivers and bus monitors was a little bit lower, so we made a very targeted adjustment in pay and provided an additional adjustment. So you see that that's $13,755. You had one position in the administrative support, an additional adjustment of $4,500. Instructional support $724. Now, very little job classifications were made with this maintenance group. We usually don't. We had a significant review last year. We looked at jobs and we made classification changes to 5 positions. Those 5 positions are we moved your DAEP teacher to the administrative professional structure and identified that as the DAEP administrator. Most school districts have that as an administrator job. And so we moved it from the teacher schedule to the administrative professional. We also moved your migrant lead teacher position that was functioning as your migrant migrant coordinator, program coordinator. They were on the teacher schedule. That's not the placement that they needed to be. These individuals did not receive a pay adjustment to get them onto the administrative professional. We just made a better placement based on their job. So that job as well. Then the compliance program position, we moved that position to a pay grade 6. It used to be a pay grade 7. That was a better placement based on the scope of that position. Pay was not adjusted in that job. We also took a look at your executive director of student services. That position was placed to director of student services. And so that position was classified based on the change in the job. And then we also made an additional change to an administrative support position, which was the auxiliary specialist based on the job function of that job. So those are the positions, very, very, very few job classification changes. That's the only job classification changes that were done.
increase, which the budget know that pay increase is in the $500,000.
You mentioned five positions for classification, and you only named main four right now?
Compliance, so your student services director, compliance, the DAP administrator, the migrant program coordinator, and the and then the bus drivers and bus monitors that we made an additional adjustment. We put an additional 2% and then bus adjustment to those 46 employees. I am recommending that the district consider the 2% general pay increase. That is what with the two other districts that I've worked with, and another district that we just held their board meeting last week, and they approved 2% general pay increase.
I have another question.
Sure.
On implementation cost estimate model one and the model two?
Yes.
Under one of them says 48 and the other one says 49. You're missing instructional support, not this, no, actually, an auxiliary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not listed on one of them.
Auxiliary?
No.
Just get involved. The administrative professional, the 13. Administrative professional is not listed in your model 1, 2% because they didn't need an additional adjustment to get to the range minimum. In model 2, you have administrative professional of $13 additional adjustment because the 1.5 is not enough to get them into the new range minimum.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, I have one question. Thank you. That was great information. Were you able to, and maybe Mark, you might be covering this, the needs assessment, the stipends for the credit, that kind of stuff. Were you able to model other districts, or is this something?
I did ask Luz to look into that for us because this will be something new that this district will be doing. And I believe she came back with a $500 recommendation. But I know that, you know, it's something important for this district so that we can start getting, the stipend for the dual credit teachers. And so I went ahead and put it in at $1,000. We have 11 teachers that qualify for this. So I went ahead and raised it up to $1,000 for that. And we are looking at, as something that I know is of interest to the board, as far as offering incentives to get more teachers that are have their masters to, you know, to move forward in becoming certified and so that they can teach the dual credit and they can get those extra classes. And we're working through the Title II so that we can go ahead and set those incentives, and we're working with UTEP to finalize a regulation on how we want to allocate those funds as an incentive. So that is working through, but for now, for those 11 teachers, the dual credit stipend would be at $1,000.
The campus science fair coordinators?
If now that Luz is recommending and the administration during our committee meeting did recommend the 2% pay increase, and that one was at a cost of $750,032. And what we did through needs assessment, we had the various departments and campuses, campus principals come and request those positions that they believe or feel that are needed for next year. And I believe last year that was also something that the board had requested that during the budget process, we bring forward all of our wish list and bring forward those positions. I did, as I was looking at the numbers that Luz was providing me, I did request from Ms. Aguirre what was my allowance for salaries. And her response to me was 1.1 million revenues over expenses. So I took the liberty of using that 1.1 million and thinking, okay, this is all the money I have to spend on salaries. So what I did is that I took that wish list that we have from the needs assessment and provided this to you. And what I've done is that I've highlighted in red those positions that, and including the stipends that we have, for example, for the high school, let me say, we've got one reading teacher, we need a history teacher, we need an English teacher, and an assistant principal. Those are the ones that I'm picking up as part of that 1.1 million. Everything else on there is either funded by Title I or CTE. And if you go to the very last page of the needs assessment, I've broken down everything by funding. You've got local funding, CTE, special ed, SCE, Title I, Title II, and food service. And so it appears that we can go ahead and fund those positions other than the local funding. And if you notice, the local funding is $679,625. So if I take the 1.1 that I was using minus the $750,000, what I have left is $381,625. And so I went through here and thinking, okay, these are the positions or the things that are important that we need to make sure that we have built into the budget. And that is what I was bringing forward to you for your approval. Now, Ms. Aguirre has allocated 10 PEZ in her budget, so which means we have $550,000 for 10 additional positions.
It's in there already?
Yes, she has it built in already. So it's separate from what I'm presenting to you here right now. She's got a separate allocation for the PEZ.
So that's included in the total 1.7 whatever?
Yes. Yes. The 1.1, Martha?
What's the 550?
Yes, the $550,000 is a separate allocation. And so I told her, okay, out of that 1.1 that I was using, I said, I don't have to worry about PEZ. She says, no, it's already built into the budget.
The allocation of 10 salaries for teachers is so that when we come to the new year and we see
September.
Large growth at a specific campus, and you know, we do a review and ensure that our staffing and our student counts are all adequate, that we can hire additional teachers with those existing 10 positions.
But those are in the 1.7.
Those are a part of the, as I mentioned, with our expenditures that I've presented,
right.
They're part of that.
Okay.
So they...
they're not even in the 1.7?
No.
Total comp and
right.
Priority spending?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if there's additional positions in here, for example, earlier there was mention of that governmental relations position. I mean, if we continue to move forward and
right.
for that position, then at this point in time, if approved as presented, then that would be probably a PEZ position if we move forward to do that. And of course, the funding that we have, I mean, there's certain positions here that might consume some of that. Remember that we were changing at the high school from 10 period day to 8 period day. So I try to pick up as many of those teachers because that is something that we absolutely know that, you know, we have to do. And so in that $381,000 that I'm using, I'm trying to pick up as much as I can from that. That also included a football coach stipend, cross-country assistant coach stipend, softball for middle school, two positions, and baseball coach for middle school, two positions. These were requests from Coach Brooks that he was needing, you know, these additional stipends. We're requesting a records clerk. I know that the copy says specialist, but it would be just a records clerk for the HR office, purchasing clerk for financial services. And then as far as the stipends, we talked about the dual credit, which would be the $1,000, that coming out of Title II. So that's not touching our local funds. But we have a wellness stipend, we need one position. A math stipend, as Luce mentioned, 25 at a $1,000 increase. And a science, we have 14 at a $1,000 increase. And the campus science fair coordinator, we have 9, and we're increasing it to $325.
Mr. Chair, I have a question on that. Can we ask for 500 on that? There seems to be some money still left over in your 1.1
million. Well, what I did there is the increase, because we do have it. Currently, it's listed at $175. And I think when somebody asked how much do we pay our science fair coordinators, and we said $175, somebody laughed at us. So we are increasing it to 500, but the difference, I'm just allocating the difference.
Okay, thank you.
So it's
it is going to
at 325. Yes. Okay. And then facilities and transportation does have a need with all the construction and everything going on for an additional HVAC technician.
Yes. How many do they have currently?
Currently, they have 4.
And one is for food service?
They have one for food service.
That just does food service?
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question for you. When's the last time we had a science fair in the district?
I just went to one.
Really?
I went to 2 just last week.
At the campus?
Yes.
District-wide?
District-wide. It was one last year, I think. But I know I went to 2 this past week, and then there was one.
Then we sort of?
Yes, 3.
District-wide.
Remember we
campus.
When's the last time we did district-wide? It's been a while.
Did that happen up there?
No, it's probably been maybe a couple of years.
Well,
it wasn't last year.
And
No, just wondering what the last time was.
Something I do want to say to that district-wide coordinator is that there is a stipend in the stipend list for that, but in reviewing that and in reviewing this, we were going to come in and remove that stipend for the district-wide coordinator, and we do have the science coordinator and CNI, and so we were going to make that as part in their job description, and so them to lead the district-wide science chair, and so we would remove that stipend. So basically, the amounts that are the positions that I discussed with you, it was the $381,625 plus the 2% general pay increase if you choose to go that route, for a total of $1,096,657. So I'm just a hair below the 1.1. And so that is my recommendation to the board.
Gonzalez,
a motion in here?
Just one question. Do you have a question?
I have a question.
It's just an observation. That it's in wouldn't I can't go on this. HR got a promotion for one of their employees, one of the recommendations. Comments are always HR. It can happen again this week. And that's my point. You don't have to answer. Thank you.
Ms. Krosko, what are Career Technology stipends?
They're currently at the same amount that we had them listed at.
Which was,
but they're not in this. No, they're not in here for an increase. They're not scheduled for an increase.
Did we not kind of divide them up differently? Am I correct? Could you maybe just give us a report on that?
Yes.
Yes, we operate.
Yeah, I look, there's your pants.
Mr. Cornell.
In any of the personnel additions or Martha in the previous allocations, do we have any dedicated extra personnel or pez for security?
No.
Maybe we ought to add to that 10 pez, maybe 11 pez. At least one.
I'd say one would be the star.
If you get two, at least we do the capture.
Yeah.
Back in the front balance, we want to use it.
Yeah, but that's not going to go up. That's not a non-board.
Currently, we have four.
Four security people.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying security or a PES?
A PES for security. Not a teacher,
but you know what? I don't think we're using the ones that we have by speed. That's another issue.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we need to do like maybe a pet on top of those pets.
Yeah, that's what you said.
And I know that with the restructuring that the board is, that I've been hearing here lately, that the board is requesting. We'll take a look at that and as far as the, you know, how efficient the security cards are being used. And I guess once we do that, we can come back and say more security guards. I think there's always a need for more security, you know, given the climate that we're in. But, you know, certainly an additional one or two people would.
Also, I think, you know, an effective use to, because I'm here for both sides, that the ones we have are used effectively.
Yes, and possibly with the increased supervision, if we go down the route that we all have been discussing about changing the line of reporting, then yeah, that would probably help with that.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move to adopt the teacher's schedule development model one. Regarding our 2013-2014 compensation.
Or we could just call it administration. Is it just one?
It's, it's model one, the 2% general pay increase.
And I'll second that.
And I feel very fortunate we can do this.
Ms.
Lauren.
Yes. Mr.
Chair. Mr. Chair. Just a matter of discussion. I agree with the motion, but I think instead of the 1,000 we're dedicating to the math and science, I think we ought to go the extra
1,500 to match the highest level. And then
it's not even the highest level, it's just the average, right?
2,500 was the highest.
It's the median. The highest median.
6,000.
The highest is
3,000. 6,000.
Now keep in mind that San Rosario has a 6,000, but their teacher pay is not as competitive as the district, so you don't need to go there.
We also give good benefits.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. That's what I was going to say, is if we move it up to 2,500, it's the median. We with extra, probably, I'm thinking we probably give our employees, based on the health benefits, probably an extra 2,000-3,000 a year.
Totally.
So when we add that, even if we're just at the median, some of them are higher, like Isleta, and the ones that we're competing against are a little bit higher. But if we match the median with our health benefits compensation, we're going to be actually high.
Plus our average salary.
Mm-hmm. Plus your teacher schedule is competitive, and everything can continue to maintain that. $2,500 for position as well.
And I'd like to amend my motion to adopt our 2013-2014 compensation as the development model one with a 2% general pay increase and to increase our math and science stipends to $2,500 each.
Okay, I need clarification. Is that going to be 2,000 for per subject? Or 2,000?
Just for math and science.
Just math.
For science. For their certified, yes, and they're teaching in that area. And I'll amend my motion too.
And of course, then the needs assessment, as presented, also we can move forward with those $381,000 in those positions.
Do I need to include that in my motion? Mm-hmm. And to accept the needs assessment as has been presented by administration.
I have a motion. Do you want
in
to
red.
I'll amend my motion.
So we've got the stipend increase for math and science to $2,500. Everybody gets a 2% raise, and we have the needs assessment as outlined in red.
Yes.
Okay. That would be my motion.
Matter of discussion, the campus science director coordinator, we did recommend $500.
Yes.
Yes. So I only highlighted was the increase.
Okay.
$325. And you know,
I'd like to note something too, and this is on page one actually already, middle school social studies teacher required for a double block. I also have thoughts on that possibly Dr. Galavis might have thoughts on a double block that should be maybe thought out with him too, being new kid on the block. No pun intended. and that's all. Thank you.
He's 25, so he is a kid.
He is a kid.
I have a motion and a second. There's no discussion until we can move forward.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Thank you, Lord.
Thank you, Lord. Thank you very much. We also paid them. That was even painless.
Oh, thank you so much. I promise.
Thank you, Ms.
Cadena.
Thank you.
The board has been very, very generous with its employees, and I'm just so grateful to work with this board and for this district. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I sure would like to see a really positive press release go out on this district-wide, as well as, you know, in the newspaper. You could even quote Ms. Cadena, maybe, you know, that you are.
There you go.
She would be a nice quote to have.
I'll take us to the next one.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was sitting there like this one. Can you see my face? Okay.
Item 6 is the consent agenda, and administration recommends approval of all items under the consent agenda with the exception of item A4, which were the April 23rd board meeting minutes that were not included in your board packet.
Does anybody want to pull any items? I want to pull item H.
Let's pull item I.
I would like to pull item E.
Anybody else want to pull it?
No.
I'll take us to. Okay, so I have EHI pulled. Can I get another?
Item 2, approve the consent agenda with the exception of E, H, and I. That would be A, B, C, D, F, G. And
yeah, sure.
Yeah. No, it's because we didn't have those in our packet.
With the inclusion of what are we reading?
April 4th.
No.
I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda with the exceptions of E, H, I, and the addition of April 4th. Hearing no discussion, please move forward.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
I'll take this to news.
Item E, adoption of TASB localized policy manual.
Ms. Searles?
I just wanted to clarify with Ms. Carrasco again. We went, just so I can feel totally secure, you and I went through the entire policy manual for local policies. We went through Lexmark, all of this, and there's nothing that's been changed over what we looked at that point. Everything.
Not that I can see, no.
Okay.
Those were the policies that you and I reviewed that were recommended to be revised or deleted, amended, and those were the ones that were that they were waiting for to be incorporated into the manual so that we could go ahead and adopt the manual in its entirety. So it's like starting brand new, starting over, and now we've got a clean slate. As we do our updates, we can keep better records of it.
But those were kept the culture opinion,
yes.
TOS. We
yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was my only issue. I move to adopt the TASB localized policy manual in its entirety.
I'll second the motion.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Item H, Ms. Matthews.
Good evening. This item is the decommissioning and demolition of the wastewater treatment plant. This together with the project that we have, which we're not presenting this evening, which is the relocation of some electrical guide wires, is all associated to the former wastewater treatment plant that we ceased to utilize in 2004. Robert Kistner, some years back, did put together a TCEQ closure plan, which was accepted, which was submitted for approval to the TCEQ, and they did accept it. However, you know, this is kind of like forensic project management. I couldn't find any action on it. And so since we're proposing a new access road to the visitor's parking lot as part of the bond projects for Canoteo Elementary School, we're proposing, we did get three prices from several companies that do remediation projects. I myself did a fairly large 5-acre site for the Paso County Hospital District. And I don't know if you guys have any questions on the proposal.
The question I have here is, we went with the highest.
Well, actually, it's only a difference of $260, because I think maybe it's because you see the first number, 57,000. And after we went back and negotiated with them, they brought it down to 50,953. And when I advised them of the $50,000 rule, they reduced their price to 50,000. And Lecon Engineering had a price of 49,840. So it's less than a $260. It's like a $260 difference. Also, Lecon Engineering's remediation kind of engineer or specialist is not. It's not located in
the Paso. The question I have is, okay, so the process that you went through,
three quotes.
You went with DNH first and then negotiated down?
No, what we did is we gave, Robert Kistner prepared the closure plan, so we use that as, in a sense, like our bid documents, because it provides a scope of work. So we provided that to three different companies. And then we solicited the three identical quotes. And after we received the three, then we negotiated down.
So you want to go and negotiate it with the highest price?
Yes, sir.
Instead of, because I've heard in the past where you look at,
Well, I'll tell you, so you can see here, in the assessment, I give comments on Rhino and Lecon. Rhino is a pretty well-known environmental company. There's not too many around here. But for some reason, after they read their scope of work, like, Rhino's quote was, like, concerningly low. Like,
no, I mean,
yeah. And then after that, and then you can see in the second line of the assessment, Lecon Engineering's department that handles environmental services is not located in El Paso. And so So I also have to tell you that due to some recent experiences, as you know, with the bonding company, I'm a little bit like, would prefer to go with someone known, tried and true, than to yes, I would like to play the same.
And you've had experience with these?
Yes, I've actually done a lot of remediation projects with CNH on a very tight timeline. I know they're a reputable company that has a lot of experience in this. They clean up PCB, polychloramine and biphenyls, not just at transformers, but in caulk. They've done soil remediations with barium arsenic, lead, the whole nine yards. Like, I'm very comfortable. And so, I think that's an important component to it. And if they can match the price of the other company, then, you know, by all means. They specialize in remediations.
I had a concern. I don't have a problem, but...
So what they're going to do is they're just going to test the soil around it, and they're going to take the minimum amount of soil, and this proposal is to take up a maximum of 140 cubic yards and just give it a clean bill of health. And on the flip side, we're working with buyers to remediate the concrete tank and the rest of the abandoned equipment so that we don't have to pay our remediation company's prices, when we can just get a general demo contractor to just knock it out.
So we are using that?
Yeah, we're using buyers for the rest of it, right? And as you know, anything that has to do with soil exploration is not.
He's stuck in that storm shelter.
Oh, yeah.
If there was a tornado, yes, that's the place to go.
Yeah, that's
I am not going.
Yeah.
No,
if you don't pass out, but yeah.
I'm rolling the dirt. Ouch.
Mr. Chair, are you.
Go ahead.
I move to. Approve the Kenfield Elementary School Wastewater Treatment Plant decommissioning and demolition as recommended by the administration.
The only question I have, you're saying that Lecon's people don't have a
their department that handles environmental services is not located in El Paso.
And the other person is?
For Rhino, yeah, Rhino is a local company.
Yeah. But D&H is?
D&H is very much local, yeah.
It looks like they're
nationwide. So, right, they have offices all over.
Oh, yes, I guess.
So they're local press.
But yeah, they definitely live here. Yeah, they definitely
live. They have the right people here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
At the officers, they're not doing the same.
No, they don't just have a P.O. box.
No, well, what I'm saying is you're saying that Lecon Engineering has to bring in their engineer, whatever that is, the environmental services.
Right.
And DNH doesn't, but DNH has offices everywhere.
Right, but they'll be using their local people.
I'll second the motion.
I have a motion and a second. Hearing no discussion.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Item I, recommendation to the El Paso Water Utilities regarding sewer connection at Kenutio Middle School.
The reason I pulled this is we don't have a price for the commission for the demolition of the wastewater treatment plant. Is Pablo here today? I know that he had some information on it, on the cost.
Really the one that is the project manager for this is the El Paso Water Utilities.
Okay.
And so what happened is I was invited to their meeting to review the development of their plans. Mm-hmm. And when I reviewed the development of their plans, I noticed a couple things. One, the we had the potential, if we desired to allocate monies to that, for the removal of the other lift stations. And so, and the other one, of course, and which Paul and I talked about, is the decommissioning and the demolition of the wastewater treatment plant. And so really, what this is just to take our design intentions, back to the El Paso Water Utilities, because the engineering firm actually works for them. And so they would be the ones, the same ones who prepared these estimates, they have Frank Spencer and Associates working for them. The ones who would have to write the RFQ or their RFP for the decommissioning of the plant would have to be somebody that's contracted by the El Paso Water Utilities. So what I'm taking back to them is our intentions and kind of like plan review recommendations and our input. But it's our input for them to carry out and to respond back to. And so we would look for them, it's soliciting to them a TCEQ approved closure plan, a price associated with that, how much of the cost are they absorbing, it is on their land, you know? And so really all of that information really falls on the, you know, on the water utilities.
Yeah, and Frank Spencer is working with them, but there's no estimate of what it would cost, because even if we were to expect to pay 100% of that cost,
right, and so I have not taken back, because I'm bringing this tonight, I haven't taken this information back to our decision on the alternates, or I haven't taken this back to the water utilities.
So right now we've got the recommendation to just design to depth and not to move any of the lift stations at this time?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So all the lift stations stay, but we...
But we design to the right end,
That our depths are in a row for the day.
And I think we talked about it last time, but I didn't clarify. That lift station that they're building for us, it's only for us, ultimately, right?
No, but Ellis, they said, could tap into it.
Well, it's only running across the street directly to us and to the park.
Right, that's correct. It's only running to us.
Yeah, so there's not an absence of somebody else connecting to it that could cause issues.
And the reality is they really cannot. I think it's, and maybe they're already acting on it, but as far as the decommissioning, I mean, you have to notify them according to the TCEQ. I believe it's 180 days before you cease to use it. So I think there's no way that they could have, there's no way they can move on the project without doing this. So I'm sure that they,
Clark, I move to take administration's recommendation to have Frank Spencer and Associates design scope of work to depth to include lift stations at a later date at a cost of the estimate $1.27 million.
I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? No. Tony, can you pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes.
Item 7A is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding Canutillo Middle School building addition design options. Ms. Matthews?
Yes, in regard to the middle school building addition, first I wanted to say how incredibly we're pulling together as a team. That includes the board, the campus administration, the architects, the contractors, Johnson Controls, and putting together this last-minute building addition. May we never use the words last-minute and building addition in the same sentence again. And on that note, I wanted to give you a brief update. At this time, the building addition is scheduled to go on track with the rest of your bond projects at Canutillo Middle School and the parking lot at Canutillo Elementary School, which are two top priorities because they need to be in the summer. That means they actually already advertised and went out to bid on May 15th. The last day for an addendum is this Thursday, the 23rd. It closes on May 30th. As you know, we have a special board meeting on June the 4th. And construction starts Monday, June 10th, which is 2.5 weeks away. So we've been working both closely with the campus, both on the exterior and on the interior. And when I went back to review the design that Dr. Reyes and Bibi and we had looked at, because I hadn't recalled, but I know I had told you at the Facilities and Finance Committee meeting that I thought that was all straight. Well, it actually wasn't. It was actually raised. And so that's one thing that I hadn't noticed. And the other one is, even though I was slightly skeptical of the brick myself, Renee has these excellent photographs. I was pretty shocked myself. And so with that, I'll turn it over. As you all know, this is Renee Jimenez from Women Care Architects with her multiple facade options and photographs, and I'll turn it to her.
Good evening, President. So Jennifer has asked for us to go ahead and bring the options that we presented to the principal initially on the project, and so I brought those as well as photographs of the brick, as Jennifer mentioned. And so, and also the color board that you guys have previously seen when we did the tours of the different campuses, and we presented the color scheme for the interiors of the renovation that's happening at Campbellville Middle School. Okay. Our intent is to use the same color scheme that we're using for the rest of the remodel at Campbellville Middle School for the building addition as well. And so those colors are here on this board.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
isn't it? Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So our intent is to, of course, match the brick color from the existing Campbellville Middle School and then incorporate a new color also into the schemes. And so as you can see from the board here located to your right, we have two options. The top option, option one, incorporates the majority of the brickwork to match the existing Campbellville Middle School brickwork. And then incorporates a little bit of a band, a dark brown band, which flows through the darker colors from Campbellville Middle School existing brick. And it incorporates a metal paneling that you can see it's in the gray.
Does that have any purpose?
You know, we just wanted to provide some different schemes.
Aesthetic.
Right, aesthetic schemes. And so you'll see that gray paneling, but the material on the color board is actually, it's a brown paneling. And the frames of the windows will match the existing Campbellville Middle School, and the glazing will also match Campbellville Middle School. And then we're incorporating the blue, turbulent blue, which is used on the exterior of Campbellville Middle School, which Dr. Reyes had actually picked that color, and it's utilized throughout the existing school, so we want to incorporate that back into this design. Option two has more of a brick band, and that's actually the option that Dr. Reyes chose, along with the assistant principal, Bibi. And so that's the option that we moved forward with. So the agenda that's being issued tomorrow from our office to buyers has addressed option two. So I'm hoping that's the one you guys like.
But it's okay either way. But any other, you know, the other thing that you guys have presented was how it related to the floor plan. Because sometimes when you see just the elevations, it seems flat. And so she put the floor plan ahead of it so you can see how it's indented and so you can kind of see how the volumes are distinguished.
So the elevations you're seeing are actually from the parking lot side, and the back side from the play fields will be very similar, but without that indention as you see from the plans there. So it'll just be the flat portion of it, and the door to enter the building will be from that back end, and that will be set in. And then we're setting in, right, and we're setting in from the existing building to do that little offset. Because the brick's not going to match exactly, even though it's as close as we possibly get to it, there's going to be a slight difference. So by setting it in, you
fool it.
Right. Yeah.
Are there closets in these rooms?
There's millwork.
There is millwork in the multi-purpose room. And so that's something that we talk about. So initially we had thought that this was going to be a classroom addition and that there was going to be a couple of classrooms out of here. And then in our presentation to Dr. Reyes, where we did show the classroom additions, she had suggested that, I guess, the choir room is currently using a classroom that is located in the 100 wing. And it's a really small classroom. It's sized the same as the other classrooms. So to open up that classroom as an actual classroom, she proposed to move the choir room over here because it's a noisier function. To separate it from the classrooms that are currently in function. So to get the noise out of the
properly for right. A choir room.
Correct.
Okay. In other words, the choir room is driving the other classrooms crazy currently.
Yes. Yeah,
I understand.
And then there's also a to-go center within the campus that she would like to relocate it to this location and open up yet another classroom over there.
Okay.
So she's opening up classrooms by moving some of her existing functions over.
But these won't just be four walls and nothing else. They'll be accommodated.
Oh, yeah. In fact, this afternoon we met actually with Ron, and we're working on the furniture package, and we're trying to roll that out on time.
And so, and you'll notice in the elevations, we're also doing some shade over the windows here. And you'll see that in that floor plan as well. Millwork in the multi-purpose room and then the choir room, and she asked that there not be any casework in that to-go center. So, but there is IT provision supply for each.
What is administration looking for corrections? Or
after the facilities and finance committee meeting, we just requested to present the facade to you all. And also the other thing is this project moved so fast that it was, you know, the last time a board meeting you approved the addition, and then by the time the next board meeting, it was already out of bid. So this one was kind of moving kind of fast, so I thought maybe it was good to touch base. If you could just ratify our facade option, we would...
Option two.
I move to accept option two regarding our Handy Teal Middle School building addition design.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. What is that? The floor plan?
That's actually the pattern that's going to happen in that main entry. So we're incorporating the logo with it's a marmoleum flooring.
The big white. Is what?
No, that's the ceiling.
That's the ceiling?
Oh, yeah. This one, yeah, that's the ceiling.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to have some travertine.
This is actually the floor pattern in our lobby. And so we have the logo in there, and then we're using these colors, which are the school colors, to incorporate that pattern.
What about the green clear tile on the right? Glass.
That's the window.
Oh,
that's
this, window. Those are the windows to match
the glazing. And
yes.
That's going to be the color?
Right, that's the color of the glazing, and then this here is the color of the frames.
I have a question, Ms. The principal obviously looked at this. Does she have enough room in the current choir room? Is that multi-purpose room maybe something that you use for a choir room? I don't know.
No.
Is it too big? Isn't that too big? Mm-hmm.
She, so in our meetings with her, she had asked for the choir room to be a little bit larger than a standard classroom, but not too large.
Okay. Right?
So, and then she did want to move that to go center.
And she's happy with all of this?
Yeah, so we have a I spoke to her this afternoon.
Option two.
Yeah.
There's no discussion. Tony, can you pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes. This is so exciting.
Yeah, thank you so much. Our contractor is standing by waiting for a text message.
Oh,
thank you very much. I appreciate it. You guys
good
are
night.
Good.
Thank you.
Item B, discussion and possible action regarding RFP 1312 for security services. Mr. Gatlin.
Board President Rodriguez, board members, Ms. Brigham. We placed information in front of you in regards to RFP 1312. On April 19th, the district received four bids in response to the security consulting services bid request. The bid evaluation committee was formed on May 14th to evaluate the proposals and provide a recommendation for award. Due to the cost, the broad range of proposed fees, and not to have a duplication of efforts, the evaluation committee recommended not to award RFP 1312 for security consulting services. The committee felt that the funds would be better utilized to hire two additional security guards or to fund other already identified security issues.
That is the recommendation from the committee that at this time, I mean, the cost was just, I mean, it was incredible what the bids came back.
And by no means do I would like to say that, just for the record, that we didn't want to put money in front of our child's safety. Obviously, you know, we need to put their safety first, but I think there's already done enough work by Mr. Gonzalez that we can take an action. I still would like to, and we talked about this, is maybe get them in on a consultative sort of a position where they look at the plans and maybe make recommendations. But I don't think we should operate in that vacuum. Just like we have an auditor, we should always have that security audit come in. Not to say that Mr. Gonzalez, you know, isn't doing a full job. That's great. Just if we even have that second set of eyes.
His report is awesome.
Yeah, I just have it here for a reason.
I think we maybe later on what we needed to is just have somebody from a different perspective, not an educational, but you know, just to take this different set of eyes of looking at it on a professional standpoint and see is there any ways we can improve it as well.
So, testing.
Yeah, I mean, sort of. I don't know if it's, let's say, like a military mindset or somebody that has that type of experience to take a different perspective on how other issues could arise that we haven't thought of.
Yeah, and I think it's
it's important to note that we have $200,000 allocated in the 2006 bond that we haven't properly used, that we could use, because you know half the things you're going to say are related to fixing those issues. So maybe down the line, we could get a security company in here or a tactical company to come in and do something with that, that could give us that review after we've kind of shored up our defenses and seen the issues that we could fix and go, you know, we fixed to what we think is good. Now we need that second set of eyes.
I think one thing is, like, to see kids going on the internet now and just getting different ideas. To, you can see a bunch of Russian videos on the, I mean, it's crazy, and so we just need to take a different look. And the other thing is that we need to look at better training or changing, I don't know if it's a mindset or the expectation of our security staff and what their expectations and roles are. So,
absolutely.
As we discussed during the committee meeting, we also discussed the opportunities in Sandy Hook that the federal government hopefully will be offering some more grant money that we can go after and some more maybe additional training for school districts and stuff like that we're going to be looking into. So that will help the cause also.
I'll be
really
excited while that's the state.
We'll see if the state will probably
pass it. Well, the state will probably pass a bill like, here's grant money, but you got to buy guns with it.
Sponsored by Smith & West.
I guess there are no discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Tony, can you take us to the next one?
Item 8 is executive session, and the time is now 9:41 p.m., and the meeting is to be closed under Texas Government Code Sections 551-074-071-072 for discussion of renewal of contracts for non-certified professionals, discussion of certain probationary term and continuing contract teachers and other certified non-certified professionals administrators, discussion of non-renewal of probationary teacher contracts, discussion of proposed non-renewal of certain term teacher contracts, and discussion of real property, as well as discussion and evaluation of internal auditor.
I don't know who's dealing with them on that, but those need to be changed. So you can get out of the